All right, good morning, everybody. It's 10 a.m. I'll call this regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting for Tuesday, October 10th, 2017, to order and ask everybody please join the board as we honor America with Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you and good morning. As always, first item on our agenda is public comment number one, opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right up to the microphone. Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to economic development project briefing, Brenda Dreyer. Good morning, Brenda.
Good morning. I won't take long today.
Morning.
Good morning, Supervisor Kitty. With the amount of expansion activity going on in our Story County community, it makes sense that our business and industry located in the unincorporated areas of the county would also have the opportunity to experience some level of expansion possibilities. Our offices were approached in the last month to discuss an expansion opportunity at a business located in the unincorporated area of Story County. This expansion would almost double their existing facilities and result in the creation of 8 to 10 jobs above our average wage in Story County. The company has inquired about incentives available to support the capital investment and job creation. If this project were occurring in many of our Story County communities, this project more than likely would receive some sort of incentive for an ordinance or practice based on the projected capital investment in high-quality job creation. The purpose of my presentation this morning is really to start the discussion if how or if at all we should address the request and support for economic development, and generally what we should do when we're approached with requests like this, and how should we proceed moving forward with businesses that wish to expand that actually sit within your jurisdiction. So not specifically to talk about the initial request of this company, but more or less to be proactive and think in terms of a more general policy as it relates. So that's
so a generic conversation, so clearly spurred by a specific company making a request, but a generic conversation about what, if anything, we would like to have in place to consider something like this. So, Leanne, the closest I can come to anything Story County's ever done along these lines is with the wind towers, where we started with a 0% assessment, and it ramped up at 5 or 7% a year to a 35% assessment. Not apples to apples with anything like this, but it's the closest the county has ever come to doing something like that I'm aware of.
Yeah, we, for a number of years, I don't know the exact number, Story County on the books has had the industrial property tax exemption, which is different from what you're talking about. That that is specific, to which you're speaking is specific to the wind turbine properties. It's Chapter 7 in the Code of Ordinances.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I spoke with Wayne Schofer at the county assessor last week. He's out of at training, so unable to be here. But that's on the books. It's something that could be used to take advantage, to be used as a possible incentive. Applications are fairly simple. Actually, in my 19 years here, I don't recall any business ever coming in and taking advantage of it. And then we do have the TIF program, and that's our urban renewal program. But the Code of Iowa does allow, under Chapter 404, for counties to do urban revitalization programs, which is, in essence, tax abatement programs. We've not gone down that path. It's a long path to go down. It's a doable path, but, again, it's different than our urban renewal area, be it urban revitalization. But there are some opportunities with that. Some things we probably need, not things, there are definitely areas we need legal guidance on how to develop that. That's developed by ordinance. has a plan that gets adopted along with it. So there are different paths that could be gone down. But right now we do have on the books the industrial property. I want to get the industrial property tax exemption.
Tell me how that works.
So the purpose of the, I'm going to take my glasses off and read the chapter. Not the chapter, the purpose of the chapter, I will get reading glasses one day. It's to provide for partial exemption from property taxation of the actual value added to qualifying real estate by the new construction of industrial real estate, research service facilities, warehouses, owner-operated cattle facilities, and distribution centers. And each of those are then detailed in definitions. It's an application that actually is available on the assessor's website that gets submitted. It's a gradation type of exemption. It starts at first year 75%, second year 60%, all the way to sixth year, which becomes a 0% exemption. Applications are filed by February 1st of the assessment year in which the value added is first assessed for taxation. It has to be on the form prescribed by the Department of Revenue, and it does go to the Board of Supervisors for acceptance, approval, right wording, I'm not sure of. The person may submit an amended proposal to the Board of Supervisors to approve or reject if the first round is not accepted. The dual exemptions are prohibited. If they've already claimed another property tax exemption authorized by law, they can't claim this. And that may be what the limiting factor has been. Wayne was a little bit surprised that no one had ever taken advantage of this to his, or applied for it to his knowledge. But again, it's on the books, and that's my quick and dirty explanation understanding of it.
Okay, so it sounds to me like with Chapter 7, we have a mechanism in place to consider something like that, and then if you add separately, but you could go down the road of TIFing a project if there were immediate dollars that needed to be spent, like we did with Vetter.
Yeah.
So, my purpose was just, this isn't a conversation, obviously, that hasn't happened in quite a while, and just to keep you appraised that there is a potential project looming out there. They've made a request, and with your blessing, I guess I will present what we have available and see if that might meet their needs, and if we need to continue the conversation, I'll be back.
Okay, so three thoughts and then Morris, I'll come to you.
Mm-hmm.
Three thoughts. One, if what we have in place meets for what they'd like us to consider, either utilizing Chapter 7 or TIF, great. You've got that, you've got that arrow in your quiver already.
Okay.
Utilize it for us to consider. Second would be, I think we need to go down the road, and I'm assuming it's a much longer process, of looking what, if anything, we want to do. What was the
urban revitalization.
Urban revitalization. What, if anything, the Board of Supervisors would like to do with urban revitalization, especially since it's a longer process that won't help us with anything that's imminent, but it's a conversation we ought to have over time. I'd like to see us move through that. And then finally, I just want consistency out of this. Whatever we're going to, I don't like the little one-offs. I don't like it when it feels like one company might qualify and another company doing something similar doesn't qualify. And so as long as we've got all that in there, I would be comfortable moving that. Morris.
To address what you said about, I'm not interested in TIF with the wind turbines. I guess if you were looking at TIFing a project separately,
what we did with Vetter, Morris, and since you weren't here,
right,
Vetter, we tipped Vetter, and then we utilized part of the proceeds from that to pave the part of the road.
To
be a standalone,
So, I think, I don't know if this addresses Rick's third point about kind of not having or having consistency, but I think there are some things before we begin offering any kind of tax abatement, any type of economic development for projects, that there are some considerations I'm interested in. One of them, if you want growth, it's to put tax money on the rolls. Okay, so I like hearing that the partial would be a graduated, so, and it would be, we would keep the property at the rate that it's already getting. So I like that, any program that
sure.
that allows us to do that, okay? But another thing is the creation of jobs, all right? And as we know, reading the paper and hearing from economic development people all the time, that it's wise to get some kind of agreement about how many jobs will be made, will be created, how long they would be kept. I think within 2 years normally what happens. And also that there be a minimum wage, and I don't mean the minimum wage,
sure.
I mean a minimum wage attached, okay? So so on that one, if anybody applying, I would hope at the county, but for this person in particular, would agree to that right up front, because that to me is a real bottom line. If they're not willing to consider signing some kind of deal, if you will, or agreement about guaranteeing so many jobs or a certain rate, then it loses value for me. Okay? So then another thing has to do with justifying that this project would not go forward without us offering some kind of tax abatement. I mean, we're talking about in unincorporated areas 8.5%, right? Okay, is basically what we'd be waiving on whatever the improvements are, our levy rate.
Right.
Okay, so the 8.5% of the value of whatever these improvements are. All right. So for a lot of projects, it's not necessarily an amount that is significant. Now, the situation I hear you talk about sounds like it might be significant, but still explaining why does it require this? Why will this project not go forward if we don't waive, if we don't offer some kind of tax abatement? So that's something that is very important to me.
But as I understand it, and I appreciate that that's mm-hmm. really important to you, as I understand it, if it's a consideration, so if we utilize Chapter 7 and there's an application filed, each of us would be able to consider that application based on whatever merits we put into it, right? It doesn't automatically say, if you do this and this and this, you qualify. It takes action of the board, right?
Okay.
So I think completely reasonable for you to put whatever litmus test you want to put on it,
mm-hmm.
but that's probably going to be different than the litmus test I'm going to put on it, or that, and that's probably different from what Marty would put on it.
Right. And I'm thinking more about expectations of an applicant who comes in and says, well, here's Chapter 7, here's what it says I can do, and this is the first applicant. If we do this, there are going to be more applicants. And then the next step down the road will be, why don't we open it up for expansion or some kind of abatement program for growth that occurs in any small business out in the unincorporated areas, not just the ones that fall under Chapter 7, the listing of those. So I am thinking that if, when Brenda is the person who's meeting with this potential applicant right now, that, you know, putting forward that you've got one supervisor who has said right up front, these are some expectations of this supervisor, how you feel about those expectations. Doesn't mean stop them from applying, and it doesn't mean that those will be what the decision making is. But I'm concerned about us heading down this road about, are we going to get into the tax abatement business?
Appreciate that. Marty?
I'm kind of surprised and agree with Lenny Schlicker-Rath in the fact that this has never been addressed before. I would have thought that this would have been something that Story County, with the growth that it's had, this would have been a visited, and it would not have waited till my time to do it. I am not at all surprised to see that the growth we talk about is happening in communities, and communities bringing their projects and stories to us, that it would probably sometime come out into the unincorporated. I'm glad to see it happening. I take a longer view in the sense that whatever, on a TIF, an abatement, or whatever, that this is something that going forward that the county will see the tax dollars accrue to it at some time. So I'm probably more the fact that I'm going to do a discussion with a business to, if I can get employment in the near term, tax revenues in the medium to long term. I think that that's a discussion I'm going to have, and I'd like to start.
Good. Brenda, you need anything else from us?
No, and I guess the purpose, because it is new arena for me as your initial point person in economic development, very sensitive that I don't want to get too far out in front of you all. On this, I think we want to be open and open for business and supportive, but needed to know kind of what your thoughts are, and I'll keep communicating with you on that. I will present what we have on the books and see, again, is it meaningful for the project they're trying to do? And I do know we do have a number of high-quality jobs above our average that are involved as a result of the project.
Well, I think it's exciting that we've got this potential growth starting, because that's the underlying factor, whether it's a level of growth in specific items that meet any of our threshold. It's exciting that we're talking about growth, because you're not talking about doing something like this for a company that's not growing in some way, shape, or form. So that's exciting. Sounds to me like you've got two different avenues. You've got Chapter 7, you've got TIF to utilize, and then other possibilities, but it'd be a longer-term conversation and probably wouldn't be applicable to anything that seems to be imminent. Yeah.
I just have a question for us. Would we possibly want to go ahead and start these conversations about the general rules or some kind of bottom line requirements or questions we want to ask? So while Brenda's dealing with this particular applicant and moving forward, would we want to start the discussion so that we could convey expectations?
So I think it would be a reasonable request for us to have a discussion about what's in Chapter 7, what the flexibilities are within our existing Chapter 7, and then that could lead us to, Laura's, do we want to consider any changes to Chapter 7? I would assume that's a conversation that kind of runs through you and Wayne and Leanne. But I think it's important that we start to be, since it's a tool the county has not utilized, we better pull it out and dust it off and figure out how it's supposed to be used. So I think that's a reasonable conversation to have.
Okay. I agree. I think this is something that I would, before we get to the county coding, as far as our expectations of doing this, why don't we just bring it to us. Let them educate us to the degree that all of a sudden we find out all the moving parts, and then if there's something that we want to do as far as our participation with any entities, then we do that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I would welcome it. I think you're on to something there, and I think that's something we can do while Brenda works in her.
Yeah, I think it's a great point, Marty. I think, Laura, from my view, it's a separate track conversation. It's not very much, but it's separate from anything Brenda might be working on. You should work on what the existing rules and regulations say. You should work with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good. Appreciate the conversation and your candid feedback.
No. Good luck.
Thanks, Brenda. Good job. Thanks, Leanne. Consideration of minutes from October 3rd.
So moved.
Second.
Anything to note?
No.
None.
Chee.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Personnel actions.
I would move as presented.
Second.
Anything to note?
No.
Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel action passed. Consent agenda board.
As presented.
I second.
Chi?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passed. No public hearing items today. Thanks, Kim.
Thank you.
Yep, go get them.
Consideration of resolution 1842, an appropriation amendment.
Morning, Mrs. Mark.
The one and only.
Hi, Lisa.
How are we? Okay, so we need to appropriate some additional dollars right now. The biggest one is in engineer's office at over $1 million. They're at 85% of their appropriation right now at the end of September. The project's construction project and the purchase of a delayed purchase didn't pass over till this year, have caused them to be critically low in appropriated dollars. Not budgeted, appropriated.
Not budgeted, and there's plenty of carryover to handle it. We just got to...
We just got to appropriate it so they can spend it. And then IRBM is at 61% of their year. They paid their spray contract and some chemicals that kind of threw them over. So I just want to appropriate some more dollars for them. And the HSC, because of the decision a couple weeks ago or a month ago to pay for some stuff out of HSC, we just need to appropriate more dollars. It's not an amendment at this point in time. This is appropriation.
Yep. Good. Questions for Lisa?
So we're just catching up with what we can do on the secondary road side.
Yep. If there's no questions, I'll take a motion on 1842.
I will move that we approve Resolution 1842, the Appropriations Amendment.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion?
None.
Olson?
Aye.
Chief?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Thanks. Lisa?
Next week I'm coming to you with a budget amendment, FYI.
Yep.
So we're going to amend some dollars in. I'm going to come to you with a proposed question.
Yes, absolutely. Good. Thank you. Next is consideration of funding source for transfer of land from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Alyssa, would you mind slipping back in the back and seeing if Jess has? So I think Jessica went to work while we're waiting for her item, and she might be necessary along with Lisa. All right, so...
Yeah, I don't really know how my name got behind this.
Because you're the money lady.
Gotcha.
All right. So we're to the point in this process, and this is the Corps of Engineer grant. It's almost 200 acres between Ames and Story City. It's the old, it's the proposed roadbed for I-35 originally, which was shifted to the east to accommodate the Ames Lake project back in the 1960s and 70s. When the Ames Lake project, when it was identified that it was not going to come to fruition, Story County started early, I want to say in the early 70s, trying to get this ground back into local control. It's been a long process. My favorite highlight is in 2008 federal appropriations bill. There was language in there saying that this specific ground would be given to Story County at no cost within, I want to say it was 180 days or something from that point. Well, clearly we're a lot more than 180 days from 2008, and we've already spent money, and now we're going to probably spend some more. This board weighed in on the approval of the MOU, but we're to the point now that the lawyers have gone back and forth, and we've got an MOU that everybody seems to be comfortable with. But the Corps wants $152,000 and some change in order to start work on this, and we had not identified where those dollars would come. We indicated we were willing to put dollars in. We hadn't indicated a specific amount because we didn't know it, and we had not indicated where they were coming from. So, Jessica, help me. Did I miss anything?
That was a very great synopsis of this long-pending project. This is an exciting day because we're ready to move forward on the acquisition of this 197 acres of land. That will be of great benefit to the county. As Supervisor Sanders mentioned, the Act of Congress that transferred the land has been pending since 2008. And I'd like to thank Supervisor Sanders. He has moved this forward in the last few years after it completely stalled. So I appreciate his efforts in that regard. And now the federal government is able to start work on the transfer. We've negotiated the different items that each entity will be responsible for, and the administrative fees that the U.S. government will be charging to transfer this land is $152,300. And obviously the land is worth a lot more than that amount of money. Story County will enter into a preservation covenant agreement with the Iowa State Historic Preservation Office regarding this land to make sure that we're protecting all the protected areas on this land. And the U.S. government will have everything completed within a two-year period. And we're hoping that will be quicker, but we'll see. So what my office is requesting from the board is the allocation of $152,300 and identifying the funding source for that money. I'd love to mail that out this week.
And just anecdotally, how long this has taken, every single person from the Corps that started out working on this project with us is now retired. We've got a whole new team. I'm serious. We got a whole new team because everybody at the Corps that started out working on this is now retired. That's how long this has taken.
That's true.
So, all right, so $152,300. My initial thought is it's got to just be general fund dollars. I don't know that there's anywhere else that's appropriate that has the capacity to write a $152,000 check. Board thoughts, questions?
Mrs. Markley speak to that. I'm going to wait for her to tee this one up.
So your unassigned ending general fund balance for FY17 was at 35%. This expense is minimal in that realm of things, less than.
Well, so what does that 35% represent in dollars?
$5.2 million. Yes, general fund is where it makes sense to me. I was actually putting the numbers in so that I would have them in the amendment also, so that we could, have those monies budgeted. I don't know why we would send it this week when they have been such draggers, but whatever.
We're moving it forward, Lisa. We're moving it forward.
We don't want to be the drag.
We're getting it done.
So with this expense and the amendment I'm bringing to you, it brings this ending fund balance in the general to unassigned to about 33.8, so it doesn't do a lot of damage to the general fund at this point in time.
And the asset is large. I mean, I estimate around $1 million in one end, so.
Questions or comments? Yeah.
No, I was
going to
make a motion.
Do it.
Okay. Well, before we go, if I am stopped, and I don't know if either of you are the one to speak to this, or Mike is, or somebody else, Rick, you've been, one of the first things that happened, Rick had a scheduled trip to Washington, D.C. to address this. Wayne came in and dropped, it was a paper drop of substantial portions, and the paperwork that has been generated through Story County dates back to the early 70s on this. So this has been languishing for decades. But if asked, when I go get groceries with my wife or later today or tomorrow and I'm stopped in the grocery store and they say, you spent $152,000 of county monies to buy some property back from the federal government, what is the county going to do with this ground? Somebody want to give me the narrative?
I'll start and then Mike can weigh in. It is our hope that conservation will utilize this ground to leverage more and better access along the Skunk River in a similar area. Right now, it is primarily agricultural ground. In fact, in many places, the same owner owns the ag ground on both sides of what would have been the roadbed, and they also happen to own some ground along the Skunk River. So while nothing's committed to, I think it is the intent and hope of conservation that we're going to leverage this 200 acres into better and more access along the Skunk River. Fair?
Very fair.
I can tell that story. Morris, you were going to make a motion?
I make a motion that we authorize a transfer of $152,300 from the general fund to... Do we transfer it to the Story County attorney?
No.
That'd be fine.
Sorry, okay.
We're not going to move it, okay, to pay to the Army Corps of Engineers.
I would second that.
We've got a motion to second further. You guys, so Jessica's been working really, really hard on this for years. The paper drop that Marty talks about, actually it was former County Attorney Stephen Holmes who put in a lion's share of the work. I'm not exaggerating. It's a legal document that's about this thick. I don't know how many pages that represents. It was interesting taking that in my checked luggage to D.C. I've actually been out to Washington twice on this project, and it's exciting to me to feel like we're finally, we kept feeling like Charlie Brown trying to kick the football. We kept thinking we were getting close, and Lucy would pull it away, but Lucy was the Corps of Engineers in this case. And so exciting that we're there. Okay, we got a motion and a second.
No more questions.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders, absolutely aye. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is discussion and consideration of Resolution 1843 to modify our farm-to-market system. Darren Moon.
Morning, Darren.
Hi, Dee Moon.
Good morning. From the board today is to pass a resolution that would allow me to submit an application to the Farm Market Review Board to modify our farm market system. This stems from our discussion back in the spring when we talked about the five-year construction program. Right, this would be Lincoln Way. This is the road we're talking about adding. That is 13th Street or 220th Avenue. This is currently the farm market system. I'll show you that in the next map. I first wanted to point out the traffic counts. This is the paved portion now of 13th Street, and this is the gravel portion. It's 250 vehicles a day, 180, 120, 140, all the way over to S14. And the current farm market system is considerably less traffic. The dark lines on this map are the current farm market roads. So that's currently Farm to Market, 210th Street. We'd like to make this road Farm to Market, so we essentially just drop that whole section down a mile. That would allow us to use Farm to Market funds to pave this portion of 220th Street if we want to do that. I would point out there is a stretch in here that the City of Ames, or Nevada, has annexed. And they've actually annexed both sides of the gravel road. So that is no county responsibility there, but farm to market system doesn't, it goes through cities. It doesn't necessarily stop at corporate limits, so it'll go right through there. There's a different term I'll show you on resolution used for that half a mile stretch. Like I say, if you pass this resolution, that just allows the application to be submitted. That doesn't change the farm to market system. The board has to approve that still. I'd say the biggest concerns the board will have, I'm on the board, so I'm pretty familiar with the concerns they usually have on these. It will be having 3 miles in a row paved. We have Highway 30, Lincoln Highway, and then we'll have this is already farm market, so I have 2 farm markets in a row and then a paved one south. I'll try to justify that by commenting in my narrative that this railroad essentially cuts off that mile, and I think they will buy that when I get into the details with them on that. So that would be their biggest concern. It's pretty much a straight swap of mileage, so they won't allow us to increase our system, so we need to remove as much as we add. Aerial showing the city limits again. So this is the portion that will be considered farm to market extension. Zooming up here, so we're going to add 3.8 miles of farm to market, and this is that half a mile stretch that's considered farm to market extension. That's where it extends into the city limits. The only downside to that is we don't. Our whole funding formulas for road use tax funds and everything is based off a lot of our farm to market mileage and stuff like that. So we don't get as much credit for that in the future, but it won't be a huge impact. And I can't give you that number. It's a large formula that they use. But that will reduce our farm to market system a little bit. And then this is the amount we're going to remove from the farm to market system. We're going to delete. Questions?
How often do you do this? When's the last time you moved a road?
600. We did that for 3 years ago or so. We added that to the system and deleted a mile, I think, down. It was in the southern part of the county. Prior to that, it had been 10 years, I think that was our first application ever to change the system.
You showed us traffic counts on 220th. Do those merit pavement?
Oh, yeah.
Consideration?
Once we get starting over 200 is when we really consider pavement. We have a difficult time maintaining that first mile in particular. We're re-rocking it all the time. It's constantly getting pushed out, and it needs some serious ditch cleaning now because the road's getting pushed out so far. Like I said, it's the railroad crossing, and that's only going to get worse. There's sidings that block 580th. When those trains are coming and dropping off cars, it gets blocked.
Yeah.
All the time for 15 minutes to half hour stretches.
Yeah, that's right. Lisa Marvin knows that schedule. She lives in the area. And important to note that we do, in fact, have the 13th Street, 220th Street paving in our 5-year road plan right now.
Correct.
Which this would, if we made this move, this would free up another source of dollars to do that paving if we ultimately.
Someone living on 220th Street would not see any change in their road by moving this designation.
Two-tenths. The only downside I see to it is this structure right here. It's a pretty good-sized bridge that we did some reconstruction to about 10 years ago, I believe. Put all new steel piling caps in. We wouldn't be able to use farm-to-market money to replace that structure in the future. There's two big box culverts at the ends here, and they're both fairly new structures, so those won't need to be addressed for another 70 years. So that's not a concern. It'll just be we won't be able to spend farm market money on that bridge replacement in the future. Other than that, there's not a lot of noticeable change anybody will see.
Is this a designation we choose to move because we're looking to fund if we move that direction?
Correct.
It's the road, so 220th is being utilized more as a farm-to-market road than 210th right now. That's what we're seeing in the traffic counts. And theoretically, Darren, if we do go in and pave 220th all the way across, we're going to see a further reduction on traffic counts on 210th.
Yeah, sure.
I'm still going home.
Yeah, but
I live on,
not everybody lives on 210th.
No, but I do. I'm just... What, why are you asking so much about turning? I live on it. So I have comfort in doing this. I think it's worthy. I think the traffic counts merit it. And I think as you see growth, I mean, you alluded to it early. I think that the annexation was done by Ames purposely, that they were going to bring things here. And Nevada's working on bringing things to this part of the county. And to me, anything that pulls traffic off of old Highway 30, which is a road that's probably over capacity anyway, it's not a bad thing. I can understand the discomfort on having three parallel roads, but I think the story that you can very easily make is the fact that we have the need.
Mm-hmm. My name, Union Pacific, is that it's a, not only is that the case you're making, it's a reality. It separates. That's a really long mile between those two with the UP running through there. More questions or comments?
Just, I have waited for that train many times myself. I'm sure that 220th traffic count is up. I've had people in front of me and behind me as I've been racing in via the back way to make meetings. So, none. So I think it's definitely justified. I'm sure Aaron will do a great job in explaining what they need to know.
Well, I would, hearing all that, if there's no, but I'm not going to take over your role, but I would make the motion that we move consideration resolution 1843 to modify our farm-to-market system, road system.
I will second it.
Motion to second. Anything further? Darren, anything to add?
No, I just come at the meetings in mid-December, so I'll have an answer at that point.
All right.
Perfect. Thanks. Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Resolution 1843 passes. Next is discussion consideration of a request from Story City for the facade grant improvement program. Leanne Harder, as Leanne's walking, our current program only recognizes our smaller towns in Story County, which would not include Ames, Story City, Nevada, and Huxley. And so this is a request for us to reconsider or to consider opening up some of that funding for a specific project in Story City. Leanne?
You stole my thunder. With that, I'm going to just pass it over to Abby and let her go over the presentation that she submitted. Just arrow through and then I'll come back up.
Hello.
Hi there.
I want to introduce you first. This is Lisa McGrath. She's the owner of 518 Broad Street, which is a building in downtown Story City. These are some historical photos. So 1910, this building was built turn of the century, 1901, 1902. In the mid-60s, half of it was sold off. So the two windows on the left in the 1910 photo basically over was sold off. And so a new facade was put on in 1965-66. So this is from 1967. Here's what it currently looks like today. It's got that slip cover everybody knows from the 1960s, 1970s. And this continues all the way down. So it's Great Western Bank is the building right next to Lisa. So that top slip cover goes all the way down. Lisa's is PDG Printing. So they have a different look facade than Great Western. Great Western has some tiling done around. So here are just the cosmetic looks. Updating the sign, putting on an awning, just moderning, making it a little more modern. What we need help with is there's water leakage, so that entry was closed in, and it was not closed in great. The construction was a little shoddy. So every time it rains or every time there's any kind of element, there's water that leaks into that entryway. And it's not appealing. It smells. It's the door gets stuck on the carpet, so that gets stuck open. You get leaves and all this stuff that come in. So that's the biggest part that we need help with. Lisa needs help with for funding this facade. So 518 Broad Street applied for a Main Street Challenge Grant. If you're not aware of what a Main Street Challenge Grant is, every year the Iowa Economic appropriates funds for construction building improvements on Main Street. Because Story City is a Main Street community, we were able to apply. So we did a $75,000 application. The total project is going to be $192,000. And this project included the facade work, repair to that entry, stairs to the second floor, hallways on the second floor, and adding a new apartment. It's $192,000 is a lot of money. The $75,000 isn't even half of it. There's been no facade work done in Story City for about 7 years. So we're hoping that this project, Lisa's project, is going to be a catalyst. Mm-hmm. Because Story City, the Main Street, it is looking a little drab. It just needs some work. There are some buildings that definitely building owners need to just be encouraged to spend some money and need some help. So we're really hoping 518 will be that project. The city of Story City is willing to put in $1,700, and they have a facade grant. It's an R&R grant, and that has been approved. So here are the total costs. So removal of the existing sign, updating the backdrop, doing repairs, that's about almost $11,000. New lettering is almost $3,000. The new awning is $17,000. And then repairs to the entry surrounding is almost $1,700. So, yeah, that's the end.
So the 32 is part of the 195?
So
this portion of the project is 32?
Yeah, this is part of that 100. Yep.
Board questions?
I have questions for staff, okay, related to the grant. So Leanne, move back up here. Sorry. Sorry. Leanne, do we fund this on a fiscal year or calendar year?
The program is a fiscal year basis.
Okay.
And so each fiscal year for the past 3 years?
Actually,
is it four?
5 years.
5? Mm-hmm. Time flies. That's true, yeah. Yeah, so it's been $10,000 on a fiscal year basis for the past 5 fiscal years.
Have we ever utilized the entire 10?
In 13, we spent 24.4.
So we went over the 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
14 and 15, nothing.
Okay.
16, we spent about $900. And 17, about
$7,000. So Lisa Marco just gave us an update of what we've spent over the last 5 years, and it's ranged from $0 to $24,000 that we've spent.
And this year we're at around $66,000 something for the city of Zerin.
Yeah, just so we can hear you, Lisa.
Yeah, I know.
This is paid for out of lost or local option sales tax dollars. That's where we budgeted, just for your references.
Okay, thank you. So my next question for Leanne then is that we're talking about being able to realistically accept applications through when of next year. I know if this money is going to tell June 30th, but as far as being able to get the work approved and paid for, I mean, for our communities under 2,000, how many, how long do they still have to apply for this money that's left after the 6,700 for Zerin?
We've left it as an open-ended. Pardon me, an open-ended application process that really doesn't have a deadline for work to be completed either.
Which is a change from where it was in the past.
Right. Okay. So we do have, I don't necessarily anticipate that Zerin will be completed yet in fiscal year 18, which is
right.
A bookkeeping nightmare for Lisa. But, that's something to discuss. At some point, do we want to have a fixed deadline? But a lot of these projects are still contingent on other funding pools to make a complete package.
So we could have, say, Gilbert, just to name our community, Gilbert come in and apply apply on June 15th for this remaining $3,300 and change. Correct?
We could. I would work with them and say, let's wait till next fiscal year to do that.
What I'm looking at is from a fairness and a procedural standpoint, as you can tell from asking the questions, okay? So we don't even know if this money is available yet or not for us to consider going forward and including the other four communities that are over 2,000 in population. So that is one of my concerns or comments.
Yeah, and I think it's a really fair concern. I have the same concern, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. But I'll just say this. I think, Morris, that at least the way previous boards handled that $10,000, that budgeted $10,000, is they viewed it more as a placeholder rather than a hard and fast cap, which would explain the $24,000 that we spent in 1 year. The theory behind the creation of this project and the theory behind removing an artificial deadline for when you have to apply each year is we want, especially our smallest towns, not to exclude Story City, but especially our smallest towns, to really be working on their main streets. It's good for them, and it's good for Story County for our main streets to improve. And so maybe this board is going to view that $10,000 as a hard and fast cap. I know I don't. I know the previous board did not view that $10,000 as a hard and fast cap. It was we had to put something in the budget, and we decided that $10,000 was a reasonable place to put, but I don't know that we ever said, well, once that $10,000 is gone, we won't consider anything else.
And in fact, because when we made our changes just a few months ago, I think that was our basic discussion, is that, we look at requests that came forward throughout the year. So what we did just approve is that $10,000 was put into the policy. So I understand that. I'm more looking then headed into what's fair when it, or have we just now, if we say, yeah, this is okay, all right, are we really opening up the facade program then to all of our communities? That's the question that we're asking, and then we haven't put a cap on it.
And if you do that, just adding to what you're saying, not trying to put where, if you do that, are you in fact meaning that everybody's got to compete with Ames, where Zerin is now competing with Ames for something, which our original intent was we wanted to separate out the smaller communities
and not have them compete with Ames or Story City or Huxley or Nevada for these dollars.
Correct.
Lisa?
And I just want to make a comment on that first FY13 year when we spent $24,000. Mm-hmm. The majority of that money was spent on consulting with, consulting services that they got from economic development.
Okay,
so it wasn't project specific necessarily, but it was to get them get help to start.
So that we could do that.
Yeah.
So, and then the carrying forward, as if we open it up, then we've done a first come, first serve that we also adjusted, you know, kind of we agreed with when we re-looked at this, three or four months ago. And first come, first serve seems fair, but now we're opening it up to the other communities over 2,000. Do we reset the clock for first come, first fair? There might be, or first come is first get the money. Because there might be other people out there who are doing the same thing, making major remodels, which, by the way, thank you so much. I mean, what a great commitment to the community, to Main Street. So you can tell I'm just dealing with the administrative side of it, procedural, not the validity of your project.
Absolutely. Marty, anything?
I guess I would start from the housekeeping because... and I do, and the fairness and the equity is not lost on me, I get that, but out of 5 years you had no takers, so you know, clearly this is a program that has languished in some respects yet. On a housekeeping basis, when you talk to Mrs. Markley on the disposition of these funds, sometimes they languish and linger in our budget, and the fact that we don't have things taken up, I get construction issues, and that sometimes there are additional fundings that need to be taken, but it is a program that has hardships to the county that have to be borne in the auditor's office and expressly off of Lisa's desk that I wish that we would seek to remedy, but we can do that another time. To me, I think you have a program that came out of the ground that was addressed in a way that took communities into account from the least to the most and precluded. I think that what we're talking about is not necessarily a hard and fast number. It's a revisit. And maybe that's a conversation in addition to what we're talking about specific here. But Lisa and Abby's application is that maybe as a board, maybe our metric should be moved from the 2,000 maybe up. So I'm not going to get caught up into that. That's just, I'm not going to make a big deal about chasing a number. I see the worth on a collective basis because the downtowns are how the communities share themselves with the world. And we'd like to see opportunity brought to each one of them. And I don't have a discomfort knowing that there are lost dollars or what are generating this, that we have it refreshes, and that, it remains to an individual board, that would be us, on how we spend them. I don't see anything that gives me discomfort or pause. And the thing is, on a support basis, I think this is worthy. It's well thought out, and I would think it only makes Story City better. But then, that's just what I think.
Yep. So I think that I agree with a lot of what you said. So a couple of things. One, thank you so much for bringing this project forward. I think it's great. Abby, we love the job you're doing, what you're doing, how you're turning every stone trying to improve Story City, and that's good for all of Story County. I have problems with anything that creates the perceived competition between our smallest communities and our not smallest communities, and so I would be really hesitant to go down that road. Again, I find myself wanting really badly to support this project. So let me just throw this out there for us to consider. The number for me is matching what Story City is doing. If Story City, which this is their town, and they see value to the tune of $1,700, I think it's reasonable for us to consider matching that fund and talking about $1,700. I would not want this to be precedent setting, saying that, okay, now we're taking all covers for this grant program, and I definitely don't want to do anything that creates the larger pool than our small community. So what I would suggest is if we decide to support this, and I'm suggesting at the tune of $1,700, that we would immediately add $1,700 to the remainder that we have for this year. That way we hold that program harmless and it keeps it available to our smallest communities without feeling like there's any level of competition. The only people Story City are you competing with is themselves. They're bringing forward this proposal for us to talk about. If we decide to support it at whatever level, we immediately add that same dollar amount into the program for our smallest communities so that they're held harmless. That's what I'd like us to discuss. You guys see if that has any merit.
I have no qualms in hearing a dollar for dollar for what the city fathers propose that this is worth to them. They exist. We budgeted for it. And the thing is, all we do is just say, if you see this much worth, I would agree with you.
I like the idea of adding into the program. So basically, we're doing this out of our general fund money. Okay. I like.
Whoa.
Are we?
Yeah, it'd be
real. Roll, yeah. Sorry, real fund.
Yes.
All right. I'm struggling with the $1,700 because I want to give more based on $192,000 amount of what it's taking, but I hear that the acceptance level is there at the $1,700. So,
and for me, worse, I just want to tie it.
It's a match. I got it. So that, and that's a good rule going forward. I got it.
Conversation that was had in Story City. I would like to partner with them. I'm not trying to run them.
Okay. I got it. All right. I would support Rick's suggestion then. Sorry. I'm apparently not trying to give away money between the county and the
It's that meeting.
Okay.
We haven't made a motion yet. Still a great opportunity to talk to us. If you think we're way off base.
I'd like to maybe share a little bit about PDG printing.
Yeah.
Sure.
We've been in business since 2009. We started when the recession was going on, and we battled through. We started out as a printing company. I print everything from one copy. Someone comes in and needs one copy to 3,000 postcards to 2,000 Iowa State magazines. So there's a wide range. We deal with all ages of people. We love what we do. I hire graphic designers. I have three full-time graphic designers in my office. But 6 months ago, I finally took the plunge and went into apparel. So I bought a digital T-shirt printing machine, and it has exploded. The demand is huge for this, and we're having a lot of fun. But what it has also brought in is the walk-in business. Before, it was a lot of business-to-business.
Uh-huh.
And so that's where the smell when you walk in has become more noticeable. And so I really do want to clean up that front because the traffic that is coming into our office is greatly increased and will only continue to increase. The phone is just ringing off the hook for T-shirts and apparel. Yep.
And thank you so much.
I would like to just talk to Lisa about Lisa too. Her PDG, you know, anytime we need anything from the chamber to the city to the school, she's willing to go that extra mile. She gives, free copies to teachers. She, gives us at the chamber discounts and free design services, and she donates to all of our events. So having her business in town for us and having that look just, I appreciate it.
Thank you. Born and raised in Story City, married my high school sweetheart. We are invested in that community. We bought the building, and we're just, like Abby said, we're just trying to start something. We're trying to get the buildings to invest in, make them better, because they're starting to deteriorate.
Well, we're so excited that it's going well for you. We expect great things. So, Abby, talk to us. You comfortable with what we're talking about doing here? Do you think we're being reasonable?
Well, I mean, the fact that that it's written for communities 2000 and under anyway, I mean, just for us considering, you guys considering giving money to the project, I think is very helpful. Like I said, anything with this almost $200,000 project, anything that you're willing to or feel comfortable with giving, we definitely appreciate that.
And I would say this, if there's anything else we can be helpful with in terms of securing the $75,000 grant, please let us know. We write letters of support, and we have to come to a board meeting, but if there's anything else we can do in support of the project, please let us know.
That'd be great.
Okay? If there's nothing else, I'd take Morris in the form of a motion, if you can.
I move that we award $1,700 to, and it goes to Story City, correct? Or can we award directly to the company?
I think it's got to go directly to the company.
Okay. To PDG Printing of Story City to help in their renovation and facade efforts.
The city is the applicant.
The city is the applicant. So it does go to the city.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to amend that and have it go to the city, Story City Chamber Connection. Is that actually
the
city
would be that?
The city of Story City.
Yep.
And it's a match to what the city's putting in.
Okay.
Right.
As a match to the amount that Story City is putting into this project.
Second.
Motion and second. Oh,
I have the easy part.
$1,700.
Second.
$1,700, which is a match to what Story City is putting into this project. That check will go to Story City. But I wanted to be clear that that wasn't for Story City to use as their $1,700. That was the match to what they're putting in. So let's deal with that motion first. Anything further?
Uh-huh.
Olson?
Aye.
Chitty?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. So the $1,700 passes. Yeah. Now, we need to talk really briefly. The second part of what I suggested was that would not reduce our total amount. So what I'm in fact suggesting is that Lisa will amend that budget to go up from $10,000 to $11,700. With this action, that does take some kind of motion, or you can just put it in front of us as an amendment, but understand why that's there.
And you're bringing this to us next week.
Correct.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Discussion and consideration of submitting a letter of intent and application for the National Civic League All American Cities designation, Leanne Hart. So this was one of the 3,000 magazines that we get on very all things county and municipal related. I noticed an article on the fact that counties are now eligible to apply. I went to Leanne with it and said, where is Story County in this? Is this something we ought to be considering applying for? Take it away.
No, you did not steal my thunder, so thank you.
Absolutely.
The 2018 All American City Award application is run through the National Civic League, and as Rick just said, it generally has been geared towards cities, but they are opening it up for counties and really encouraging more counties and more regional approaches to this. We have a couple deadlines. I'm going to cover those first, and then I'll go over the program. October 18th, which is right around the corner, there's a letter of intent to apply that is recommended. While not required, it is recommended, and you actually save $100 if you submit that on your overall application fee. And then the application is not due until February 28th of 2018. If you do that letter of intent to apply, you only pay $150 application fee. Then in April, finalists are announced. Then you have a competition that occurs over next spring, and the final event culminates the middle of the end of June 2018. So five main criteria are used to judge applications for All American Cities: civic engagement, inclusiveness and equity, collaboration, innovation, impact, and future planning and vision. That's the fifth category. The National Civic League does see this as an opportunity to recognition and reflection, allow communities to assess their strengths and weaknesses, come together in challenges, and show on that national stage the people and projects that really make your community, so Story County, a great place to live, work, and play. So as I was reading this over, after Rick gave me the little snippet, what really jumped out of my mind was that focus on what's happened in the past 5 to 10 years and the incredible leaps and bounds we've made in planning, strategic planning, increasing access to various communities, the SOD grant program, different initiatives that it put in play. The application is pretty daunting, I will say that, but it's not undoable. It was something I would lead, but definitely have a lot of input from others. Do want to note that as part of the application, they say in a pay it forward spirit, if named a finalist or All American City, we agree to consider supporting AAC through an NCL, National Civic League membership, for a minimum of the next 3 years. I wanted to know what that was. That's $275 a year, $275 a year. So I've gone through, again, the application. It when it does eventually get submitted, if we intend to go down this direction, it will be lengthy and require work, but definitely doable.
Questions or comments?
I spent probably a good hour last night reading the information, watched the video, okay, really uplifting, but the video made me realize that it was quite an effort. I did not sign up to download the application. I was sure that Leanne had already done that, and I had no desire to read that. So my thought is that maybe we're better off looking towards submitting in 2019. Instead of 18. And I appreciate Leanne saying that the actual applications are due the end of February. We've got budget in January and February. We know we're going to have some discussions about communication staff, you know, assignment duties as we keep on loading people up, et cetera. So that's all going to occur in the next 4 months, which is when we would be asking staff to pull time away from their other duties to put it together. And considering they've been, was it 1946 or 49 that they've been doing this? I mean, it's been quite a while. I assume they're going to have one in 2019. So it's an intriguing opportunity. As I went through the five areas, I certainly saw with visioning and strategic planning, we were right there. I think creative, innovating assets just came to my mind. So I really did think about this because it was different. You know? So that would be where I think that we should do, is if we want to give direction to start something, but let's wait and apply for 2019.
Yeah, so I think that's really reasonable. My only hesitation there, Loris, would be Story County deserves to be one of the first counties recognized, not in the second batch of counties recognized as they just open this up.
Okay. Leanne, is it going to be when they open it up to counties, are they still going to limit it to 10 finalists? Or, okay, so we'll still be competing against the cities.
Okay, that's my understanding.
Because right. So, I did notice, like, they gave examples of three particular winners who seemed to focus on what we would call social issues, social justice issues. Obviously, it talks about equity, you know. So I can see that the uniqueness of our application, since we don't address those problems, we'd be approaching equity from a different standpoint. You know, I can see where we would stand out just in the uniqueness of our application.
Yep.
Okay.
Can Rachel help you with the application process? I mean, is that something that, you know, you could be, get help? And you had spoken how much of a lift it would be earlier.
That means that we can discuss that.
Okay.
I think it's not just me, too. It's probably involving Matt Blake with some mapping, a mapping component. Yeah, mm-hmm. I can do the map, but he's going to be the one to make it pretty, look pretty and make sure I'm indicating right information spatially.
Yeah,
you touched on the fact that, you know, clearly Story County and prior to the predecessors brought a lot to the table in the sense that we have a great story to tell. We are constantly revisiting, refreshing, and adding. I think that our merits alone on what exists on the shelf today would be a pretty substantial and compelling argument to say that we're there. And that would give us the ability to start addressing things that you and I and I'm sure Rick would like to see us do as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think that there's work to be done? Sure. I'd probably be more inclined to start the process than wait for the process.
Okay. The applications, community information, community statistics and map. Part one is how equitable are opportunities in your community? And that's looking both inwardly as well as outward. Part two is tell us your community story. Focus on the last 10 years of the community's progress and development and describe how that progress
that's
has benefited your residents. Part three is describe civic engagement in your community. Part four, describe three community-driven projects. That's it. Part four. Yeah.
So, when the staff is going, because I suspect this is going to also include reaching out to local communities, you know, and the interaction between, et cetera, et cetera. So make sure that you are bringing these comments of fatigue to Mr. Sanders, okay? Anyway, so, yeah.
So is there any reason, that we couldn't submit the letter of intent, and if we start down the process and realize it is too much to get done by the end of February, is there any reason that then we can't back off?
Okay.
You comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with that.
All right. Would you make the motion?
I would move that we direct Leanne Harder to lead a project in filling out the beginning the process to complete the application, and that we allocate $150 to be sent to the NCL with the letter of intent.
We don't need the $150 until the actual application.
Right. Okay. Letter of intent simply saves it. If you file the letter of intent by next Wednesday, it saves us $100 if you file the application.
All right. So then we'll scratch the dollar amount of that and thus just order that we direct Leanne to submit the letter of intent and to begin looking at the process of completing the application.
Good.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Thanks, Leanne.
I'm not going anywhere.
Thank you anyway. Consideration of strategic plan and annual review. Shot, Leanne Hart.
That's right. My one comment. Time goes way too fast. But we are there. We're actually at the last, and I have a slide for the end, of the last fiscal year of our current strategic plan. I don't expect you to read the objectives on that slide up there, but I'm going to go over the five with you in the next five slides. The strategic plan that was adopted has five main objectives. One is reviewing our compensation strategies and design strategies for the implementation of merit compensation system. So each of these, in the way the strategic plan is designed, we have an objective and we have specific steps that work towards that objective. So I'm going to go over the five objectives and then show you where we are on the steps. Second objective is continue to build and develop watershed management plans and promote watershed education and conservation practices. Three is fully implement COOP-COG, conduct annual training, apply for grants, purchase needed equipment, and conduct regular exercises. Four is update building security in all county buildings and educate users to ensure safety and security, and that remains a top priority, I'm summarizing. And lastly, review implementation technology solutions to achieve hyper redundancy. And actually, this one's a little bit unique that when you get to the steps, we deal a lot with our infrastructure, our roads and our bridges. That one seems a little bit off, but that was the direction in which the board and elected officials and department heads went in fiscal year 15, heading into fiscal year 16, planning for this. So what I did is I did reach out to all the elected officials and department heads, have some questions, let you know where you are or where the county is on each of these. Is it underway, completed, ongoing priority, or do we remove something? I'm happy to say that we don't remove anything at this point, and we're weighing down, so that's a positive thing. I'm going to go over the plan itself to kind of help you through. Have some check marks. Coding, LDC, if there's a check mark, it's completed. It could be completed, though, and still remain ongoing priority. We have a couple incidences of that. If it has a little calendar, it's underway. Or it's just maybe an ongoing priority. We've worked on it, but we haven't completed it. We haven't really started it. It's just we still need to have it there for discussion. And then we have a couple that just haven't been tackled yet. I'm going to address those. Any questions thus far?
No.
I have a comment, and since you moved down to when you're talking about the actual projects and the listing, but also back into the description with the strategic plan under Parks and Trails, so I have brought it to you here today. There's wording, it is the second sentence in where it says under Parks and Trails, page 5?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. And it says these. Right. Okay, I lost my place now.
You
need to do it? No, I got it now. Okay. These steps will assist as the county works with the ISU Research Park on the green space plan. All right. Now, works on their green space planning. I remember talking to Steve Carter a year and a half ago.
Steve Carter.
Oh, sorry. Head of the ISU Research Park.
All right.
All right. So I've gone in and talked to him about what the plans were for the research park. And Steve had shown me drawings that showed additional green spaces as buildings came up. And Steve made a comment to me that was indicative that they expected the county to come in and do more parks there or take on more parkland. And I said, well, geez, that I know the that hasn't been talked about in any board meeting, and this was before I was on the board. And then he said, oh, well, it's 15 years down the road. So, Mike, would you be comfortable with changing the wording to clarify this, that these steps will assist as the county consults with the ISU Research Park on their green space plan? I mean, just consulting at least says, hey, you know, we're talking, we're helping, but we're not actually working on that beyond Sodexo.
As far as those other, I guess I can talk to this one. As far as those other areas are referenced, it has been. I guess it's been considered that there would be two additional areas that that the research park will come to us at the right time and ask for our consideration on will we be a partner on those at that time. I don't know when that time is, and as Mr. Carter referenced, that maybe that's several years down the road, that we'll have that opportunity then to fully consider do we want to be a part of and manage those parcels as we are the main parcel there. Does that make sense?
It makes sense.
We haven't made any commitment.
And in fact, nothing's come to the board.
Or just come
to the board. But let's do this, and I get that you're concerned, Lawrence, but let's do this with this specific section in this document. This is past tense, right? This was something that was created back in 2015. The 2015 this was created. This part of it was a snapshot in time at that moment. So I'm with you. If we want to go forward, great. Let's make sure that we're saying what we intend to say. But as far as going back and trying to amend something that was said by a previous board in the past, as far as plan, I don't think that's appropriate to do in this context, but I get your concern.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. All right. We'll talk about it next year because then we'll be discussing.
Well, it's time to redo this.
Yeah. Don't steal my thunder.
Okay. All right. All right.
Thank you, Mike. Thank
By the way, I want to say this. Well, Mike, thanks very much. I want to say this. As the one member of this board who was here when we initially started talking about doing Story County's first ever comprehensive strategic plan, and really making the point again and again that we don't want something that gathers dust on the shelf. We want something that's a working document that we're actually going to hold ourselves accountable to. It is really refreshing to go through and look at how much this document has directed our work and how much of this we've accomplished or at least made progress on. What a highly beneficial tool this has been. Thank you, Leanne.
It's actually one of my favorite projects to manage because I do get to see the accomplishments, and as you said, things have occurred. And it actually jump-started a lot of other departments to think inward and have their own strategic plan or work programs to guide them to help achieve these tasks. So on that, employee compensation and benefits, I'm on page 6 of the strategic plan. Alyssa and HR's hard work really needs to be recognized. All three of these have been completed, and these are not easy tasks. All three require a substantial amount of efforts. The last one, the evaluation of the benefit package, that's an ongoing priority. And again, the goal is to attract, attract, and maintain high-quality employees, and
And actually, I think you have something on the agenda yet today, too. So that does speak to how this is an ongoing priority.
And it was something that the county had not done in 25 years prior to Alyssa taking this on, or maybe more than that. But what we found was we were all over the place. It was a great job by HR and a daunting project to get done.
Stop me on each page if you have questions. The next one is parks and trails, 5 steps to achieve the objective that I stated earlier. One has been fully completed, and that's the conservation package of the C2C plan. That has other projects that are jump-starting from that fall from that as well. Two are underway, working with Iowa State with the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor project. And then the Army Corps of Engineers.
Are we doing something with the Army Corps of Engineers?
I honestly did not see the. I didn't. It's just coincidence. That was on today's agenda as well.
Can I stop you there? And I'm loath to be intercessional in this matter, but you did, you know, when as far as placeholders, I think this reflects a point in time to your discussion you two just had. But when you put there in the Army Corps of Engineers, you had the budget needed at $115,000,
yep.
And we just moved it from $252,000. Language does not bind. You know, the thing is, the board has the ability to bind itself, and you know. So I'm saying they're saying that you know this to me it reflects more in a real hard and fast manner of what was done prior, because that was the suspicion that was the dollars that were going to be needed. So.
And in fact, that's what it would have cost us in 2015 if we could have gotten to the end of it. But now we're not there.
Okay, I don't mean to take up any more of the meeting time, but I'm just saying that jumps out at me for the fact that, okay, yes, I think that you have a dated document here, and on a going forward basis, I think you can sit there and say, well, this doesn't really apply, or that's out of date,
sure.
And whatnot.
On this one, 2 action steps still remain ongoing priorities. Work is always ongoing to achieve those components of the objective. Community resiliency has 4 steps. 3 are underway, and all 3 of those are actually ongoing priorities. We have the COOP-COG plan adopted. That annual review will come to you, I think it's now November 14th, with the idea for exercise next spring. We're talking about long-term security and planning, and you know we're doing the comprehensive exercise. So that's underway. The one that hasn't really had any momentum is the discussion of floodplain regulations. I put that one on hold until we got new maps. I think it'd be foolhardy for us to talk about any changes until we see what our maps are going to be. So that one, it will be something that we'll bring to the board when we talk about a new strategic plan. We know the time frame for the new maps now, which we did not. We thought it'd be sooner rather than later, and I'm just glad we now have a time frame too. Any questions on community resiliency? Then water quality, there are 4 steps, 2 underway, 1 is an ongoing priority. And this does really relate well with our watershed planning, our parks and trails and watershed planning too. There's definite overlap. And then again, we have the C2C plan that's holding us accountable for all these steps as well. And lastly, infrastructure. The 3 do address really more of the roads and bridges. Know that it continues to build on a 5-year road plan and CIP and C2C efforts. All 3 are addressed through budgeting, through our planning or CIP, and all I don't think will cease to be an ongoing priority. So with that, no questions. The next steps, consider today the annual review publication. What that looks like is basically what you see on today's agenda. Just putting in replacing what's out there with some explanatory text, maybe what these symbols mean to the general public. Really no changes this year. Last year, the board did do some series of modifications. I'm not proposing any because we're waning. We're at the end of this fiscal year with this plan. So March to April of 2018, we'll have a work session to really begin development of the next strategic plan. Define the 3-year, 2-year, 5-year, whatever that may be. I just put holding what we've been doing fiscal years 19 to 21. Have that so that's ready to go July 1st.
So I hope this board will commit to readopting a strategic plan. That clearly will look a lot different than this. It's a different board, and we're in a different place. But I think anybody who has any awareness at all of where Story County was compared to where it is today would recognize that this strategic plan had major impact on what Story County's gotten done.
I think back to the real start with the initial focus groups. What was that, 5 years ago or four?
Well, we started with CPAP, right?
Yeah, CPAP. So I guess it was longer ago.
2012.
Okay, thanks. So.
2012.
And that this is now the part of the result in the C2C, and it's incredible the amount of work that has been done and the amount of thought and input on this one.
But I
do go to look every once in a while as we're considering something when I go through the agenda, and I every once in a while I'll go and look and see, well, is that on the C2C plan or is that on the strategic plan? And it helps me then kind of refocus. So thank you.
Yeah. So I'm having kind of a pseudo proud parent moment because this strategic plan, due to staff's efforts, did exactly what you hope. There's so many bad strategic plans. They're either poorly written or once they're written, they're ignored. You never go back to them. That's not the case with this strategic plan. And you just look at the results and you think about the things, the way we move in government, if we don't have something in front of us, a target that we're moving toward, things tend to get lost in the shuffle, right? If we're all busy, it's easy to lose track of things. And this exercise, I believe, really helped to move Story County forward. So what do you need from us now?
Consideration of the strategic plan annual review.
Okay.
I would move consideration of the strategic plan review as presented by Leanne today.
He gets the easy motion. I will second.
anything further? Sheedy.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Approved. Thanks, Leanne. Next is discussion and consideration of the Raymond E. Robson rezoning request. Jerry Moore.
Morning, Jerry Moore.
Let's see. So I got the board got a letter from an unhappy citizen, unhappy property owner, who thought his property was commercial, and in fact it is not. So I forwarded that on to Planning and Development and asked them to look into it. Jerry looked into it, and this is what he found.
Right. It involves his property at 19516 Winchester Avenue. That letter was received on October 2 of this year. He owns property in the Fernald area, and the goal that he's trying to accomplish is he'd like to remove an existing building and build a new structure for like a welding shop and for storage of equipment. But it's currently zone R1, transitional residential district, and he thought that this change from commercial to the R1 district happened in like 2004, 2006. We actually had conceptual review with Mr. Robinson back in August of this year when he contacted us about his project, and we informed him that the property is currently zoned R1 district and went through the process with him. Administratively, our department does not have the discretion. If we view this as an error, a mapping error, we don't have the discretion of just changing the map. So we explained the process that he would need to go through, which would be a rezoning application submittal, which would be reviewed by staff in the county. It would go to Planning and Zoning Commission and then for a recommendation, and then that would ultimately go on to the Board of Supervisors for action. So we looking at some records back in 1997, May 13, the county rezoned about 8 acres of land from commercial district to R1 district, and it excluded in this ordinance the property owned by Mr. Robinson.
Say that again.
Back in 1997, the county went through a rezoning request from commercial to R1, and it specifically excluded Mr. Robinson's property.
So it was commercial at that point and specifically addressed in 97 that it would remain commercial.
Correct. And maps that we have from that time to 2002 show the area as commercially zoned. Maps after that time and period show that there was a change of his property to the R1 district.
Okay, so it was changed on our maps. Is there any record of a change being made by the Board of Supervisors?
There's no record found of any process to change it.
So somehow our maps changed with no record of why the change.
Correct.
Okay.
And so we received a letter. The Board received a letter. Rick had asked me to contact the county attorney's office about whether or not the chair or the board could request the review of this property, ultimately to go through the rezoning process. Had discussions with Ethan. We do have a provision in our land development regulations, 92.05, that gives the Board of Supervisors the discretion of requesting the change. So,
Dan, let's stop right there. Okay. So I want to give the board my rationale for why I asked that. This is a property owner who is unhappy, believes this never should have happened, is not comfortable down here in the courthouse, is not comfortable in a room full of people. And so the last thing I want to do when it appears to me that this is our mistake is say, oh, by the way, you need to file this paperwork. You need to come to this meeting. I want us to be able to handle this to its resolution rather than asking him to do anything. That's why I asked the question if we have the authority.
So this just shows the Fernald area. The properties that he owns are in the southeast corner of the intersection of Richland Street, which is the east-west street, and Winchester Avenue, which is the north-south street. Closer view, these are the two properties. The property on the north, it's a little over 6,300 square foot lot. The building, actually, existing building with some additions, about 4,500 square feet. Our records on Beacon show that was constructed around 1900. And then in 2000, he constructed this building. It was a 70 by 70, 4,900 square feet on a little over 17,000 square feet. During that time, the property on the zoning permit indicates that it was commercially zoned. So again, this is the building that he would like to remove. He cannot do that in an R1 district. It's not a permitted use. So this shows you the zoning. Everything that's yellow is R1 Transitional Residential District. And you see Mr. Robinson's property outlined in red. The red, which is the district that he would need to go to, is commercial, light industrial. And then the green represents agribusiness. Land use plans, C2C, land use designations. We've got it right here because we're showing it as proposed future land use, commercial, industrial. This is the designation that needs to be. So if we go through this process, we would not affect the C2C plan. It would just be a zoning map amendment. And so the land surrounding it, you see, is a rural residential area. That's the yellow. And then there's that park in the northwest corner of that intersection. So that brings us to the request. If you support this, you would request staff to get this item on the November 1st Planning and Zoning Commission agenda. To request a change from R1 Transitional Residential to Commercial and Industrial District, and then ultimately this would be before the Board of Supervisors at the 14th, November 14th meeting. Do you have to answer your questions?
I'll tell you where I start and where I finish. You got a bad map. You had no action by a previous board to change this designation. This is commercial property. The end. You got a bad map.
You good, Loris?
I'm good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the request will be that this will go to planning and zoning commission. My hope is that they will make a simple recommendation to the Board of Supervisors that we deal with this on November 14th and we take it back to what it should have been. I would hope that we would hold this property owner harmless from any. It should be as if it never changed. It shouldn't be that it changed a residential and now we're changing it back,
right?
Because then there's potentially some additional requirements that they'll have to meet on anything. It should just be, no, that was our mistake. It never occurred. This, since 1997 or whenever it was, this has been commercial property and we treat it that way. Now, you still got to meet all the rules and regulations for commercial property, which will maybe cause him some heartburn on redoing the building he wants to do, but it should be under those regulations.
Right. There is actually some relief written in our current ordinance for when you look at 40% of the buildings constructed, you're able to look at what those existing setbacks are. So part of what Rick's referring to is this is a really small parcel, and his goal is, I think, to build something that's the same size. So we will definitely look at that closely and work with him closely on that part of it as well. And then does that also include no fee for the request?
I want to make sure. No, this is our error, unforced. We need to fix it, and we have that ability.
Make the motion.
I then propose that we move consideration of the Ray Robinson's rezoning request as presented by Jerry.
With no fee.
With no fee attached.
I second.
Further discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Jerry, do you need anything else from us on that one?
We're good. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Good job.
As always.
Departmental reports. We got our engineer here today to give us his report.
Aaron, before you get started, I had a question I didn't ask you here previously. Well, how much a year do we get on farm to market funds?
Farm to market, I believe it's $1.3 million.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, I start out on the maintenance side of things, and I don't enjoy reporting on this, but starting next Monday, we're going to start putting our plow fronts on. Feels like winter out there today.
It does.
So we start out with these plow fronts, putting those on all 15 trucks, and then over time we start adding the wings, and then there's underbody plows. There's also wings to add to the water graders. It all takes time, but we're going to get started next week. Move on to some bridge repairs done first by contract work. We had Denco Construction come in and help us with a number of these high abutment concrete bridges that are, they're all 75 to 100 years old, but the bottoms of them getting really deteriorated, but the deck is in decent shape, so we want to extend life as much as we can because we know we can't replace them all at the same time due to funding issues. So we had at least four of them repaired. What they do is they come in and fill these grout bags. They pump grout into a bag so it keeps the grout together, and they essentially build some walls in front of them. They do really good work. You notice all these bridges look familiar. It's all the same type of design, and they've worked well over the years. It's these metal handrails that are really narrow and the farmers hate. You can't get machinery through there, so we're trying to get rid of them as we can, but some of them just need to be extended a bit in life. Those are the pictures of the four they replaced. Something else while they were in that came up, it was pretty concerning to us. This is E57. Kelly's in the background. It curves just west of Highway 69. We had a depression in the road that I had been keeping an eye on for a number of years, and it hadn't changed, but all of a sudden what we have underneath is concrete pipes. So the sections of the concrete kind of pulled apart, and we're starting to suck dirt in. We usually have the issues out further, but really we have them in the roadway. It actually punched through, so we had a hole in the road. Turned out, investigation, we had a pretty good void under there. We were dumping 5 gallon bucks of rock, and it just disappeared. So, fortunately, Denco was in, and they do this type of work, so they were able to get out there really quickly within a few days. And what we had them do is slip line it. This is a liner. They slip through it, and then they fill around it with grout. You're not able to do this everywhere because it does decrease the drainage opening size, but this one did allow us to do that. And they're able to do that very quickly enough to open cut the pavement, which gets very expensive. So it costs about the same as an open cut repair and replacement, but we don't have to disturb traffic at all. And then they're also able to drill down from the top and pump grout to fill all the voids underneath. Moving on to stuff we did in-house, this is we don't have too many bridges with these types of pier designs, but it's kind of shadowed out here, but they're supposed to be square, and you can see this one, for some reason, out of the four we have, had some real deterioration issues. Zooming up on it, it was really where the steel was starting to show, so it's concerning. So our crews built a nice steel encasement, and we pumped concrete down in there, and they did a really nice job on this. difficult part is getting the concrete there. Our wood bridges, we punch holes through the deck and go straight down, but getting a concrete truck, we have to build some custom chutes to get the concrete down there, and the concrete's really heavy. So but they were able to get it done, so they did a really nice job on that one. Moving on to some of Manat's work they did for us. This was our last section of North Dakota. We did it with maintenance money, so we had to split it into four sections. We overlaid it. This would be our last section, so that North Dakota is completely overlaid now.
Okay. Go through the reason we use maintenance money.
Well, we originally started out with a total reconstruction, adding widened shoulders, and we couldn't get the right of way, and then the neighborhood had an issue with making this a through route by making it a better designed road. They liked the neighborhood feel and not being a through route. So we decided just to go back to use the maintenance money and just do a thin overlay on it, which will buy us quite a bit of time.
Mm-hmm. But we've still got the narrow shoulders, and so just be aware of it.
And while they're...
You speak to the neighborhood.
Yeah.
What would be a traffic count on that road right there, that picture you just showed us?
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Does it thin out as you go farther north on North Dakota?
It's pretty similar throughout the road. Okay. I believe it's maybe 1,500. That's
yep. Okay.
I remember, Darren, you saying 2 or 3 years ago, 1,000, and that was 2 or 3 years ago before the development
started. Okay. Thank you.
And while we're asked, then this is G.W. Carver, north-south, or head looking north, and then Cameron School Road here. That's to this turn lane, the darker area you see over here. About the same time, the city of Ames, well, it's still in the county, we got to pull it back here. The Irons subdivision paved their Stang addition up on the other side.
Yeah, that's interesting to me that Stang is going to end up butting into the Cameron School Road. While you're here, go far left side with your pointer, Darren. That corner right there, last week we had a discussion that there's a developer who's purchased all of that and is looking at developing that run through the city of Ames. In fact, slated for future annexation into Ames. But one of the considerations that we keep pushing, and that this won't come as any surprise, is we currently have intersection issue there. We got to do something with the traffic there, and it's time with this developer now making the request. We're not going to get a better time to have that conversation. And so, Darren, I think this percolates right to the top of our conversations, and I want to make sure you were in on them all the way through.
Moving on to some of our maintenance with our own crews again. This is a box culvert replaced. Just pointing out a few of the projects we did as examples. It's an old box culvert. You can see it's in rough shape. And you look inside, those are not sticks. That's steel that used to be in the floor, and it's completely undercut. Quite a few structures out there like this, but this is definitely the worst we had. So you can see it was extended with a round culvert at the one end. So we had to pull that out as well. It's got all kinds of rust holes in it. It was stuck in dirt in as well. Got that replaced. You can see the pipe sticking out here that we replaced it with. And while we're in the area, we ditch clean, get dirt to build out the flatter slopes. Accomplished a lot of ditch cleaning this year. We're really caught up. We had a backlog of 2 to 3 years. The past 3 to 4 years, we've been doing so much flood damage work that we haven't been able to get to our ditch clean as much as we'd like to, so we're really caught up on that. So we're about down to just 1 year. We can almost get them done in the same year now, so it's great to catch up on that. This is on Timber Road. Ditches just get filled up with dirt and don't drain properly, and the road gets too wide, so we cut the ditches out. This is an example of a regrade. When we say regrade, that means we pull a lot of this dirt out because the road over time gets shoved out and we lose our ditches and it's hard to maintain and it doesn't drain properly. So we pull the dirt out up on the road, build the road up, kind of narrow the top up a little bit. We do long stretches of these and get the drainage going and get better crown back in the road when we do that.
And most of the time people like that we do this. Now they hated it out there on, 180th or whatever going out to the ISU
Yeah.
Port Farm. They hated it.
And that was ISD, it wasn't the farmers. Farmers don't like when we narrow the road up, but we still try to keep it at least 26 foot wide.
Right.
So that wasn't really the farmers' complaint, it was more ISD on that one. Just some tile work we do, a lot of tile in our road ditches, not just district tile. Had a tile outlet in our ditch on a steeper hill, so that over time it's constantly running, so it cuts a big gully in, so we just ran tile down. Moving on to the rock, we hauled with our own crews. The blue lines are the miles we did south of Ames, kind of an organized haul with our own trucks, and that's what we're trying to do, is haul more of our own material rather than hire Mark Mary to do that for us. We've, since July 1st, we've hauled over $300,000 worth of rock. That equates over 1,200 loads of rock we've hauled out, so that's really good. But we've only spent a third of our rock budget, so we're probably not going to get it all spent in-house, but you're seeing more rock on the road with the same amount of money, because if we were to farm that out, it would have been twice that. It would have been $600,000. So,
which is why we're spending the extra money to get the tandems and the up.
So if we haven't got through the budget yet, but in the next year, there could be a decrease in rock asking amount for budget, but the end result is you'll see more rock on the road if we're doing it in-house, so it's not a decrease in the rock we're putting on the road.
Yep. Good story. Before
I move on to construction, I just wanted to comment quick on sweeping a bike path on R38. That's come up. I get calls periodically with dead animals, and sweeping the rock off the intersection is the biggest concern, because it doesn't take but a week for that rock at the rock intersection to get pushed out all the way across the bike path, and the bikers have to swerve around at the intersections, which isn't a good situation. We typically try to get out there four times a year. There's requests for more. I think what's going to help that is we get our Kelly Shed built. We'll be able to move our sweeper truck down to the Kelly Shed permanently, because we'll no longer have to sweep Lincoln Highway bike path, because that's all Ames and Nevada now. So that's the only bike path we'll have to sweep. So we'll just house it down there and we'll get to it.
Well, we have Country Club running south out of Nevada. Do we never sweep that, or do we utilize Nevada to do that?
It really only has one T coming off at the Rock Road, so it doesn't take as much maintenance there. And that one, we put a little bit more of a fillet, so the pavement goes further back into the gravel, so it doesn't affect the bike path that much. But yeah, I think we'll see more sweeping on that in the future because of that.
I have a question now. Just since we did get a constituent contact on that 3 months ago or something like that, right? Darren, are you going to get back to Mr. Maggie, or did one of us want to get back?
I don't recall how we left that. Rick requested I brought that up in the board meeting to at least discuss it, and I don't know if I have his contact information.
I'll look back.
I'll reach out to Darren.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Moving on to construction projects. We did 7 this year. We're almost completed. The yellow, these are the 2 asphalt overlay projects by Ziering and Roland. 2 PC projects, paving, and then the 3 bridges. This is on Ziering, heading into Marshall County, 18. This was done by a different contractor, Hartman. We usually have an ask for paving projects because they're close and local and they're able to bid projects lower, but this is the furthest project away from Ames and Manass that it can get, so somebody was able to compete, and it was, I think, within $1,000 or something on the letting for an $800,000 project, so it was very close. But Hartland did a good job, but in my opinion, nothing compares to the work Manass does, so we're very fortunate to have them local. And Manass did one heading north out of Roland, and those were both completed in late August. Moving on to Grant Avenue, the paving's all complete there. This is before they had the rock shoulders put in and before the bike path was paved. A couple pictures of paving the bike path. It's a different process. They have these little concrete buggies that they dump the concrete into to get them out there, and a little small paver for the bike path. It all turned out really well. This is the one tight spot we had at the top of the hill. We had to put a retaining wall in here because there's a house here and they had their well they did not want moved, so we had really constricted, so it's kind of areas where we had the pig shoulder. That's all complete. The issue is all we had left right now is some finished dirt work, and with these rains, it's just not cooperated. I think the farmers are feeling the same pain. They just got a little bit of drying. If we get a few days drying, we can get this thing open and back to the public. But I think they got a lot of work done yesterday, especially towards the end of the day, and we might be able to get the whole thing opened up by the end of the week is the goal. And a reminder, at the south end, this is West 190 is here. This is the new pavement. The dark area is the bike path. It'll come to this location, and then they cross. Right here, we're just going to put signs up for the time being and say bike path ends. Because if they cross and went over here, there's nothing to connect it into an Ames. They don't have their bike path built, and they have a narrower road with curb and gutter there, so if bikes go that direction, they're going to just have to follow the normal traffic laws and follow the roadway. Mm-hmm. Talked to the developers actually this morning and talking about this won't get the bike path until that area west of what Ames calls Hyde develops, and the developer will put in that bike path, so it's developer driven. They're hoping within the next year that'll be put in, and when that happens we'll have more meetings with Ames and discuss how we're going to sign the actual crossing for the bike path. 600th Avenue, that was completed in early August, and that's back open to traffic. The bridge projects we did, this is Milford 22, what it looked like before, and it had a big scour hole underneath, and you can't see it in the photo, but there's a large district tile that ran directly underneath the bridge. Replaced that with a box culvert, and you don't want a tile underneath a box culvert because you can't get to it to repair it. So we had to do a little relocation, but it was large, 36-inch, it's actually a drainage district tile. Pictures relocating that before we brought in the precast box court section, and that's the finished product.
A little better.
Yeah, this is the bridge that had the long wood span, so it balanced more than most. We could not keep the rock on there. It was just a nightmare to maintain, and they were actually crushing the beams that bounced so much. This is over just south of Colo on 250th Street. It was a smaller wood bridge, and because of the hydraulics, it's somewhat rare, but we're able to reduce the size of and get by with pipes instead of a concrete box culvert. Lifespan won't be quite as long with these, but it's less than half the cost, so it's well worth it to see how much life we can get out of these pipes. And we took twin pipes, and then we put concrete drop walls in there and reinforced the ends. Should do well with that design. And the last one is West 190th Bridge. That's what it looked like before. It was a really high structure built over the top of it. The bridge used to be down here at one point, and the road was raised, and they had wood piling raise the road up. Some pictures of the steel is what concerned me a lot. It's hard to see, but you can see all the way through these beams. It was rusted so bad, especially the outer beams. The interior beams were still pretty good, but the salt that runs off the road, you can see the light through the beams there. That's why it needed to be replaced. Picture of starting. One big benefit to the dry weather this year is we kind of had a built-in runaround for the stream with the old structure here. Because we put a box in, we ended up with a new alignment. We had to straighten the channel a little bit, but they're able to utilize the old bridge as a runaround for the water. But the contractor had a concern, and the crane would have been sitting so high on this side, they would have had a hard time setting the box. So because it was so dry, they just filled in. We didn't need a runaround. There was no water coming through there, which is very rare for this spot. So they stuck the crane on this side and was able to set the box much easier. These are the precast units. It's a twin 10-foot wide by 12-foot high, so it's a large structure. Picture setting. This still happens, the one sitting on top of one of these wing sections. That's the one section we did have an issue with. First, it had a gap here. We were able to mitigate that by putting a steel plate on the back, but then after they backfilled, we came back the next day and it had tilted 4 inches, and we found some cracks. They excavated back out on the backside, and there were some cracks and some concern with some steel that was cut off, so we had them replace that section in order to delay us a day, but they were able to get that replaced pretty quickly. We already have the asphalt overlay over the top, and this is how it sits today. This was done about a week ago, but the shoulders are so soft with these rains we've had, because all the rains is now running off the asphalt and deposit on the sides, and it really makes for a soft shoulder. So all we have left to do is get the shoulder rock put in, and then the guardrail, which has some heavier equipment that needs to dry out just a little bit to get us out there to do that, and we'll hopefully get this open in the next week or two. Again, looking from the other angle. Going behind me is something we accomplished. Oh, I just threw this picture in. Everybody's wanting this road open, even the deer. A couple of deer staring at us. I'm wondering when this road's going to get back open down there.
By the way, remind me, Darren, I've got one of our constituents who lives out there sent me some drone footage of all of this. Okay. So I'll send that to you so you have it for your record.
This is back up the hill from that. This is one area where the pavement was the narrowest and it had a really steep slope. And this landowner is very particular with his ditch. He actually has sodded it over the years and likes it to be in really nice shape. I understand that. We really needed to build this out some, so we hauled in some clay. We built it out about 3 feet with rock, flat with the pavement. We're going to overlay this road next year, so we need that extra width to get that overlay on top of them. And then brought in some black dirt on the top and sloped it up real nice, and it's seeded down, so it ought to work well for him. He can still mow it. Moving on to construction design plans we're working on right now. Final plans are actually due for University Avenue south of Ames right here, paving this gravel road down to 260th. We have a little bit of delay getting the right of way. We're working with Ames. It's a bit of a unique situation. ISU owns the property. Ames has annexed it, but it's within our project limits. So Ames staff's done a good job expediting. I request that they purchase the right-of-way in here because I can't purchase the right-of-way in the city of Ames' name. Came down to the end, their county attorney or their city attorney had some issues with why the county can't just buy the right-of-way. So we're working through those details. But I think we finally come to an agreement where they're going to buy it, but then we're going to have to come up with another agreement for how we pave the road. And we typically do that with Ames when we do a joint project like this anyway. The one thing I wanted to point out to the board is you can kind of see the last roundabout of the city is right here. You can see a little corner of it. So the pavement stops right there now. So we'll be paving this portion here within the city of Ames. And this is with farmer market money, so I assume the county will just fund that ourselves and not ask for reimbursement from the city, because the city just pays this portion half. So this is
they did our part.
Payback for, yeah. That. So that'll make it a lot cleaner. Also working on that Sandhill Trail Bridge. This is one we had the floodplain issues on. The good news, with some additional hydraulic work from our consultant and a face-to-face meeting with the DNR, they have worked out the floodplain issue we had there and have come to an 80-foot long slab bridge design that will work in there, so we can move forward now with the final design on that bridge. I wanted to talk quickly about the budget amendment, at least to talk about a little bit earlier. Pretty considerable amendment for us. It's $3.33 million we need to amend, but there is some good reasons for that. Majority of that is just the construction carryover. This money was budgeted last year and it just carried over into this year, so we need to add that money into this fiscal. We had the $950,000 we're adding for the new buildings as well, and some of that is a carryover issue as well. And then $240,000 for the tandem truck. We tried as hard as we could to get that delivered last fiscal, and they got it right on July 1st, but the claims couldn't meet the last fiscal year, so that's just another carryover issue as well. New shed construction, the bid opening for that we scheduled for October 31st. I would comment, we don't know which building they would start with, and if they do start with a rolling shed in the winter, it's a little bit more of a issue for us. We need the heated building, so we might have to shuffle some things around for the rolling, because that building does need to be demolished before they can start construction on the new building. So hopefully they start on the Kelly building first. And then the Kelly annexation public hearing is tonight at their council meeting, so I don't anticipate having issues there, but we'll check in on that, see how that goes. IDOT flyover project, just a couple comments that you probably watched the construction of these piers going in and the abutments at the ends. They had an issue. It wasn't this pier. It was the next one that's off the screen. I think we're hearing from the contractors they had it. These are unique pier design. I commented in the past how it's supposed to look like the old computer punch cards. You see the bricks with different colors. Those are the punch outs for the old computer, the original computer designed at Iowa State. That's what it's supposed to look like, but it took some special concrete that's supposed to consolidate better, and they had issues, so they had to completely tear one of them back out again. So I think that's delayed them some, but I don't know the details of why. This has been planned to go through next construction season anyway, but it's still ongoing, but it'll be a great improvement when they get it done.
They're driving the pilings on the one on the left right now.
Yep.
Working out there in between.
I could hear them last night. 9 o'clock at soccer practice, picking up fans in here.
Right.
Yep. 265th, this is I-35 again. This is the bridge they're replacing over the interstate. It's a county road, but DOT-owned bridge. So 265th is still closed, and they have their closure still set through December when they hope to get that back open. A couple bridge closure issues I want to bring up. This is the one we closed, I think, 2 years ago, 248, just south of Highway 30 and just east of Nevada over Indian Creek. Somebody's taking out these center signs and driving through the bridge. That's a concern for us. We had talked, this bridge, we do plan when we get some free time, it's more winter-type workforce, to actually remove this structure. And when we do that, we'll probably vacate the actual road when we do it at that time. So that'll take a hearing. But I think if we vacate it, there'll be less liability to the county if it's something that does happen out here. And the same issues for West 190th when we close that. Hopefully here in the next 2 weeks when we open up the other portion, we're going to leave that bridge in place. But we could have those same issues if people vandalize the signs and keep trying to drive over it. We could have those same issues, but we'll see what happens with that one. That's a little closer to
civilization.
May not happen there. Sign inspections, I wanted to bring up a pretty big change we're going through right now. We don't have our signs on a GIS-type map. They're all based on nodes and stuff. Our service bureau that we have in Des Moines for the county engineers have come up with a great new sign program. We have to get all of our 9,000 signs we have in the county into that system. They came up with a good way with our current database to get them at least in the right section. So you see all the signs piled in the middle of the section. We have to move them to where they go in that section. It takes us a lot less time, since, like I say, 9,000 signs to move. But once we get that done, we'll have all of our signs in a GIS system. So if a sign disappears over time, our current system, we don't necessarily know that until somebody points it out. But we can look at this and say, there should be a sign there and it's not there. The other good thing about this program is we do our night inspections, which starts next week for us, probably this week now. Every 2 years, we have to drive all the signs and check the retro reflectivity to see how they show up at night. Once we get this sign program done, all he'll be able to have to do is take his tablet out, and as he's driving down the road, the next sign will automatically pop up on his tablet, and he just hits one button on the sign condition and just move on. So it's really going to help on those sign inspections. Wanted to comment, or talking about signs, there's some street signs issues that have popped up. This is back on West 190th. Our project's just over the hill here where it's closed. But this is a picture I took. We had some tree issues blocking sight distance that we took care of, but it also showed one of the street signs at the private subdivision, but publicly open road. This is a wood sign that's carved out, I believe. It says Valley Road. There's some interest from the subdivision to update those signs and change them out. I think it's been within the past 5 or 10 years that MUTCD, which is the National Manual on Signs, says these internal private subdivision signs are supposed to meet a certain code, even though they're private, because it's a open to the public road. So I'm kind of working with Jerry on that to review our requirements, and we have a lot of variations in our signs, particularly.
Yeah, that's bigger than just Valley. Valley Road. If we go down that road, yeah.
So we're gonna start reviewing what we require for new subdivisions, even, and make sure things are consistent in the county as much as we possibly can. The other issue with this subdivision is something we just had pop up on the other subdivision over on Moose Road, West 190th by the Oaks. They put up a private drive. Squaw Valley wants the same thing. For the time being, I told her they could put up a sign that said privately maintained road. I'd be okay with that, but private drive.
It's not a private drive.
Right. Don't have as much issue on this one. This is all to this road because it's like a little J and it's a dead end. There's nowhere to go. Really don't need any extra traffic back there. We're just passing through. But some issues are kind of working through it with county attorney now and what we should be doing with these signs.
Darren, did you and Jerry get copied in by Matt about the gentleman who declared? Okay, so you're aware of the request.
I was going to bring that up too. Back to Squaw Valley.
That's just the road right here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when you Google map Prairie Moon Winery, it takes you through this road instead of taking you over on GW Carver. We're working to see how we can get that out of the Google Maps system. There's a way to do it, and that individual has done it in the past, so he's working with Google to try to get that out. I think he requested from Matt to take it off our system too, but we cannot do that. It's still one of our open to the public roads, so we need to keep showing it on our maps, but it would be nice to get it off the Google mapping system.
Yeah, just where it doesn't automatically send people.
Send people in.
Community agreements with the cities, real close to getting one approved with the city of Ames. I'd like to get this in place before winter hits, because with Ames, it's strictly snow and ice control only. It doesn't get into other road maintenance. This is the area that's changing the most. The blue lines will be the areas that the city will maintain for the county. So they will actually take all of 13th Street and some of 580th and 580th down the Highway 34, us, in exchange for us doing the gravel portions over here and then the 570th up here. But that works out well both for us. They don't even have a mortgage, so you see most of these lines on here that are the yellow are gravel roads. Riverside Road is all gravel.
They're going to need to buy one.
But in general, it's good for us to have these cooperative agreements because we're in the area of most of the stuff anyway, so these are a good idea to do.
Yep.
But so this will be coming hopefully in the next few weeks to the board for your approval.
I'm just excited about not having to worry about Lincoln Highway right there, especially where the one drift comes across.
Yes.
Right there at the top of the hill.
Yeah, that's about right here. The only portion left that's in the county is right here, and the city will take it up to 590th. Unfortunately, we have a little stretch in front of the Jehovah's Witness Church that's a quarter mile of the county, just half the road, and that kind of comes in my... The next one is the city of Nevada. We do not have an agreement with them. We met with the new city manager 6 months ago or so and kind of updated him on that situation. I keep offering to come up with an agreement, and at this point, we're going to have to go into winter just going strictly by jurisdictional lines. That's really our only choice. In the past, we've kind of had a gentleman's agreement. We just can't operate that way. It opens the county up to liability. And when the public calls me and wants to know who's responsible for a road, I think I deserve to give them an answer.
Yeah.
Federal aid swap, just quickly, that's still moving along where we're going to use the federal aid money and DOT is going to give us local dollars. Unfortunately, we went kind of backwards a little bit. They're putting more restrictions than we wanted on the end. We're hoping to use the local dollars on any road At the time being, they're saying it's going to have to be at least a farm to market, if not a federal aid road, but I think they're going to stick to the farm to market as a minimum road. And then really what's bogging things down right now is the RPA discussion. I think counties are pretty unified that the RPA process for our road funding is not very beneficial at all to us. This is CERPA. If they could give us that money directly somehow, but the RPAs are now set with taking them out of the process, so they're getting back involved. So I think we're headed back down the road of keeping the money at the RPA, which all counties, I think, like I say, we're unified and hoping to get away from that system. The RPA will still be used for the TAP funds, which are the bike trail funds, and giving that money out. But the RPA discussion is ongoing. DOT would like to get this wrapped up. Originally, I said by the end of October, coming out with guidelines on how we can spend that swap money. A couple drainage district issues. Again, this Fernald issue. The south of Fernald, we have the hole in the field, and we need the permit from the railroad to jet the tree roots underneath the railroad right here. That's been an ongoing, about 6 month process. Finally got to the point where they said, okay, we've got all the information from you, and now we'll pass on to the next office. So it's just a continual mess with the railroad. It's a new permit process, like I talked about before, because now railroads are responsible for culverts, but not tile. And because they're not responsible for tile, and I don't know if they're upset that some county sued them about tile, that now they're putting all kinds of restrictions on what you can do with tile even. But we've got to be able to maintain them. And our engineering consultant, ISG, is saying you have the right to do it regardless, but you're not going to find a jetter that's going to go in and do it without railroad permission. So that's where we're getting stuck. I told them lately, we have the right to do it regardless, but I just didn't work with you to get it done cooperatively, and that sped up the process a little bit, but we still haven't gotten the answer. It's frustrating. That's the hole that's out in the field, so he wasn't able to crop that all year. And then looking back the road, these are the trees that are blocking the tree roots are in the tile. This is the same district, BD20, if you hadn't seen this yet. This is this side on the west side of the tracks finally dried out enough. They put the big drop structure in. Looked real nice. Looking inside that drop structure, that's a 7-foot diameter pipe, so it's a huge pipe they bored under the railroad. Then the last one is this just north of Holdups on 580th again. You can see the tile issue right there is the hole. We've investigated it. Fortunately, it's not a blowout, it's just a joint issue. We're waiting for the crop to get out, and right now we're waiting for it just to dry up enough. We'll get in and repair that. It won't take us too long, so we'll at least get that issue fixed. But you can see there's still a silt issue. They kind of took the waterway out, so it's caused a lot of siltation issues in that area. Lastly, I just want to comment on our staffing right now. We have one new hire. Dennis Pratt started, I believe, about a week ago. He's our new mechanic, assistant mechanic. We've kind of changed that job description a little bit to kind of make him part-time mechanic, part-time truck driver, so do dual duty there. Our engineering tech position is open. Unfortunately, that's a very difficult position to fill. We had no applicants for the position, so we have two techs. Our second tech actually accepted the lead technician position yesterday, so we'll bump him up, so that'll open up the other tech position, and we'll probably have to do more of an extended job opening and probably only get a new grad out of a tech school to fill that position.
But since our one stepped up into the lead position, that's appropriate.
It should definitely. That should help. We'll have to bring in somebody new and have to train them, but that happens from time to time. And then we currently have an operator one position that was left vacant by, we have two people on our tile crew. We have Dave Toot and then Tanner Davis. He just recently left the county, went to work for Caterpillar. I wanted to bring that up because pretty good sources that Dave Toot's probably not going to be around all that much longer, which is unfortunate. He's been a great county employee. And that kind of...
It's not another official.
Oh, no, no, there's nothing official. Just, we're just planning ahead for the tile crew because the person he was given experience to just left. So we have pretty much, we have one other person, some motor grader operator that's helped out with the tile crew on and off. We're just not sure if he's interested in the position or not, so we're working to get that figured out. But we have a lot less experience on the tile crew, and that's just that position itself is just all experience.
Yeah,
that's all it is. So the one thing I wanted to bring up again is I think all three of you there at that meeting over in Boone when ISD presented the district washing service proposal, we might have to look at that in the future depending on how things go with the staffing issues. That's where you pretty much hire that out for the district tile, and we'll still have a lot of county ditch tile we'll have to deal with. But keep that in mind. That's all I had.
Questions for Darren?
None.
Darren, you're doing a great job, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Other reports, discussion, and direction regarding additional employee benefit options. Boy, you talk about opening a can of worms. Hi, Alyssa. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I know I was going to say good morning, but I wasn't. It's not morning anymore. I wanted to bring this item to you. We've had some requests for some different or some other benefit options, not necessarily paid for by the county. I've been approached for some more robust identity theft protection plans for county employees. We've been approached for financial planning services. There have been requests. I do get approached by quite a few agents selling their products, whether it's from nursing home insurance or cancer products, additional life insurance, different things like that. So I just want some direction from the board. Back in 2012, November 2012, we did an RFP for a broker and agent. So we've been working with BenefitSource since then. We have all of our products through one broker and agent of record for employee benefit, wellness programs, stuff like that.
But that was based on an RFP.
That was based on an RFP, and that's how we've done.
Opportunity to bid.
And we have pulled everything underneath BenefitSource now. That includes pulling vision. A couple years ago, we finally took it underneath there. So I just need some direction, whether we want to continue working how we're working under that broker and agent under BenefitSource. What other benefits would you like me to explore? We have a fairly robust, in my opinion, benefit compared to some counties. We offer short-term, long-term life insurance. We have voluntary life products. We have, within the last couple of years, we have purchased and provided an employee assistance program. More robust, we have one that went with our life and disability insurances. We have vision, health, and dental. There are many counties that do not have vision or dental insurance, and there's a lot of more smaller counties. So I don't know if the board, I just wanted to have this discussion to see if you want me to look into other ancillary products for our employees. One thing I do want to remind the board is when we, regardless, even if we're not paying for it, it's a direct sponsorship of that product. So I do want you to keep that in mind.
Not only is it a direct sponsorship of that product, there is, at whatever level, some administrative responsibility that we assume even
right.
Time we have some.
And we do internally administer all of our insurance products. I wouldn't want it any other way. I think that's the best. I've done it other ways where you fax stuff in and you don't do the online enrollments. There are more issues with that. We have more errors. So we do that internally.
I think it's wise every once in a while to put out for bid just to make sure that your provider, if you package it or somebody, is still offering the best overall package cost for us and et cetera. So, but I don't hear any. I hear we do have a pretty extensive basic benefit package, and I think if you took it out of the private sector, you would find those items, but not much more beyond that. And so I'm not excited about opening up anymore. We even offer a savings type the plan. All I can think of was Rick, but okay, it was through Rick. Okay, for so
it's a really well named program.
Yeah, I know. That's why I remembered it just because of that. So. But yeah, so I think that that's a very comprehensive package. The industry I came from before, we were lucky to have that type of benefit package. I had no vision. I had no dental. And my premiums were much higher for my health insurance. So I do, coming from a private sector, I do think that we offer a good plan already.
Yeah, so I think I agree with Boris. I would just say this, if there comes a time that we're not offering something that you feel like we need to be offering, we would come to the board first and say, we need this add-on, we need this in, and then we would go about figuring out who would provide it, rather than a provider comes and says, hey, I want to offer this. And it's kind of put the cart ahead of the horse for me, and I think we're really robust in what we offer. I mean, the whole point there is twofold. One, we want to be really, really competitive for our employees. Two, we want to do the right thing. We want to offer the programs that we need. So my stance would be, we don't need to offer anymore at this point, and if at some point you or HR determines that we need to do something a little more robust or competitive balance for our employees and treat them right, bring it to us.
And what we currently do is, and with our current products, I get obviously the renewal rates. We have our life and disability through Cigna. And when we package it like that, we do get discounts.
Right.
We have multiple lines through them. If I get a rate increase, and it's, you know, we haven't had a rate increase for that. Then we go out, we will market it
sure.
with other, you know, we'll take a look at, I probably won't recommend going back to Dearborn, but, you know, look at the different companies and how we do that. And we do that all through our broker. All the others have been extremely happy with our current insurance broker. She's excellent. But that doesn't mean that, you know, the board wants to look.
Sure.
Different places in the future, we can sure do that.
Too. There's sure time to do that. Marty, anything to add?
I would say with the addition of the RIC plan, we've done a pretty good job of completing the portfolio. I, like Boris, come out of the private sector setting. And to me, when you do the comparisons in my circumstance, we have a modest offering on the life insurance side of things. Because, you know, you're not, I think, might it be not so much the rates, but just the offerings in the sense that I came from a setting where you had, employee, spouse, dependents, whatnot, and you were able to spin it up, whatnot. To me, that would be the one question. It's just like, I don't know if they're, you know, I'm not looking to take on the additional responsibility, the additional housekeeping of dealing with this stuff, but I think that clearly there probably are some products out there that you could probably be better with. And just for the fact that I this time last year had them, and they're there. I just don't know how you would access more. I think it's a low level need, but it's just like if we're looking to offer what we can at a cost or as a reasonable amenity to the employees as a package, I'd say that would be where I'd point you.
Are you looking at the rate? Is that what you're...
I'm just looking at... Once again, I was feeling like in a market that had the ability, and there was no portability to it, so I left it behind.
Oh,
You had the multiples of income. You moved into accidental death or disability component. You had the multiples of base in addition to...
We have that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just like what I had and what we don't have here. And so I'm just on the comparison basis on apples to apples. But other than that, with the RIC plan, we did, I think, pretty good on a robust offering to the employees as far as quality of life and financial stability.
We're slowly transitioning everything over.
Well, I think what we offer is fair. It provides a good benefit to our employees, but it's not excessive. And that's the balance that we got to hit, considering that these are all public dollars that we're utilizing.
Sure.
So,
There's nothing there. If we left it alone and said just stay on top of it and on a rate check, do that.
We do that anyway. Yeah, we do that anyway.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right, so direction that I'm hearing is no additions. Okay. If you guys come up with a specific addition, bring it back.
Bring it back.
Exactly.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, while we're talking about an emergency notification process for the building.
Yes. We had a safety meeting last week, and it was brought up in the meeting. There was a gas leak here in Nevada. And it was brought up that there was no notification that went out to the employees within the building when that leak, when the information was out there. And so the safety committee did have a discussion. We have in the past have been, there was a small committee put together to kind of look at, okay, so how do we notify our employees of certain things? Who should be notifying? Who has the authority to send out that information? So I told them I would bring it to the board and get some direction as to how the board of supervisors would like. Whether it's safety committee, who, how do we move forward from here? We do need certain.
Well, you better define what emergency means first.
Yeah.
Because this specific example, so City of Nevada road construction crews hit a gas line. It was fairly substantial. There were moments early in the process that there was a possibility we're going to have to evacuate this building, but that was really short-lived. So it came to my attention. When the first time it came to my attention, it was the Nevada City gas line, possible that we will have to evacuate the building. We won't know for a few minutes. Came back a few minutes later and said, no, we're not going to have to evacuate the building. In my mind, that did not rise to an emergency that you notify. I notified my two counterparts here. I notified Leanne Harder, and I notified you, and that was it. That was as far as I went because you better start with what is an emergency, because if we're going to notify every time something happens, or you're not going to clearly define where that happens, I think you have bigger issues. So for me, if they would have been moving us toward evacuation, I would have notified the entire building. I don't see the point in that case of saying, hey, they hit a gas line. Maybe we might have to do something down the road. They're going to tell us in a few minutes. So.
As we talked about this in the safety committee, we went beyond when, but you're right. It's a good. How do we define about what is time to notify staff? And there were some comments made about, especially on the first floor, they have people coming in and moving out all day long, and so people were telling them about this and asking them questions, and of course they felt uninformed too. So, but
well, that's different than emergency.
Yes, I understand it, but I just think then we moved into then. Let's assume it is an emergency. Okay, we've got to do something, move people, and do it rapidly. And it came up that the safety committee prior to our discussion had actually looked at some options, but it stopped when it got to the point about what is the chain of notification and chain of command. And that went in a whole different level. And, so you were here, you're chair of the board, that's fine. I wasn't here. Marty, I don't know if you were here or not.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, and I was in Ames. So who does it go to? Well, vice chair, and then I back you up on the EMA, I guess, officially. I mean, so supervisors. But then there were questions about what do we do when it's conservation and somebody's out in the field. Who gets to make that call, who takes over, and whether it be just we, the board, pass something that officially empowers whoever is the, I don't want to say highest ranking, but whoever is the director or whoever has direct reports to them, or, whoever is the naturalist or who's ever in charge of that. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to do this. But so I think one of the things that the committee might have been asking for, right, Alyssa, was some kind of how would this committee even move forward in determining what the chain of notification and the chain of decision-making being, and with decision-making being the part that they also felt needed weigh in.
And I think the toughest part is whose responsibility is it to put this together. I think that's part of it. The safety committee, we all meet. Everybody has their own responsibilities. We've met. They're looking at different, what's the best. We don't have an intercom in any of the, at least in this building.
building. We have, you know, how do we notify employees? So they're doing some work on the backside so that we could bring that to the board. It's not an easy task. No matter what we write and bring to the board, or whoever writes and brings to the board, it's not going to cover every single situation that I mean, we can't think of what's going to happen. The unknown. So my only comment to the committees in the past is we put something together. If we're going to do that, that's somewhat simple and not so convoluted that when a situation arises, we don't know what we're supposed to do. So that's been one of my comments. But if the board wants the safety committee, you know, to put together these proposals and bring them to the board to get it finished, we can do that. I just told the committee I would be happy to bring it to the board and get some direction.
So I don't even know where the safety committee would start. I mean, as it currently exists, if there's an emergency, it goes to the emergency management director. The emergency management director contacts the chair of the emergency management commission, who then contacts the chair of the board of supervisors. Those two happen to be the same person right now.
Right.
That won't always be the same person, but they are right now. The sheriff is the vice chair of the Emergency Management Commission, and he statutorily has all kinds of authority and responsibilities in the event of an emergency. He's also notified. From there, it becomes you're counting on those people to make appropriate decisions with who's notified, when they're notified, what they're notified, and what if any decision. You know, each one of those four have some authority in their position, but not total authority in their position. And so then it becomes you're dealing with the emergency working through. I don't think the safety committee has a lot of authority in dealing with those. Doesn't have any authority over the emergency management director, doesn't have any authority over the sheriff. And so it's a convoluted process that it sounds to me like we had some people who were not happy that they weren't in the know, or they were unhappy that a decision was made that based on the set of circumstances we're not notifying any further than this. And I don't know how you solve that problem. I don't know how that problem would have been solved even if we had a really robust, this is what will happen. Because at some point, somebody's got to make a decision. Either this is an emergency or it's not an emergency.
And the decision would have been made by Nevada Fire in saying that, okay, this is clearly an emergency. It would not have been a county determination. The information would have disseminated out of the city of Nevada. And, I mean,
But
the thing I said, they were clearly in conversation with Rick, and I took a low-tech approach. Just as I was coming into town, I walked over to one of the fire lieutenants and asked him what was going on, and he said, nah, it could have been something, and it's just more of an aggravation at this point.
Yep.
Yeah, as I said, in Ames, I was probably a half an hour would have come over. I thought, nah, I'll just go ahead. I have work I can do at Ames still. So somebody will have to know what's good. Yeah, but
On the active shooter, we were responsive to the Nevada Police Department for protection of the building. I mean, you know, not everything is vested within the county as far as the actions that are taken on behalf here. And I think I get the concern. I mean, clearly, you could smell it, and when you couldn't even see the building. As you come into town and what it would take. I mean, I had just left Hubbard a number of years ago after they had their natural gas explosion. They got a wonderful grocery store out of the place and took out a number of buildings, but the fact that nobody died is a really shocking part.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it does happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But
I'm hearing no direction from the board, unless you guys have some kind of direction you want to give to Alyssa to take the safety.
I get the concern because you had only about to be here, but I think that had it been a clear and present danger, the city would have notified us to begin evacuation. He was already in the loop on it, and movement would have been communication to prompt movement would have been disseminated at that point.
I did
using that as the example.
In general, for communication, maybe back that the safety committee looks at or discusses is you listed off those people. You listed off an initial commission. And I think that if we communicate, we're able, or the safety committee were able to communicate to the various departments that look, when there's an emergency, start with make sure everybody's safe, okay, and then try to get a hold of And I guess it would be, would Keith be the first person to get a hold of?
Right, not for county. Keith doesn't work for the county.
Yeah, that's where I'm back to. So then I guess it would be get a hold of the chair, the vice chair.
But the third supervisor, at some point, somebody has to determine, is it an emergency or is it not an emergency? So just hitting a gas line out in front, using this as a specific example, even though we're talking generally, just hitting a gas line out in front of the building, is that an emergency? I mean, depends on what kind of ramifications come from it. It can be an emergency. Mm-hmm. But just hitting the gas line, is that an emergency? I don't know. Is a wreck out in front of this building an emergency? Well, I don't know. What two vehicles are involved in the wreck and what are they carrying? It could be. And so at some point, you got to, if you're going to go down that road of saying, this shall happen, these people shall be notified, there's some kind of human decision-making that's got to go into that. So Keith doesn't notify the chair of the Emergency Management Commission on every single issue. He makes a decision. Does this rise to the level? Are we mobilizing? Is there potential impacts? And you're going to have that every step of the way.
Right. And I was just thinking about, as the employees thinking about this situation, if they had called up, you know, said, okay, if you think you've got an emergency situation or you want information about if we have an emergency situation, call up to the Board of Supervisors office, empowering
them.
So
what I'm hearing, what I can take back to the safety committee is, if it's an emergency situation, notification will come out from the chair board. The chair of the Board of Supervisors or next in line or whatever.
Yeah.
And they will get that information from either emergency management or the sheriff or that information. So employees will be notified at that point and that's who makes that decision.
Okay.
That's where I think it is now.
Okay.
Thanks, Alexa. Very good. Okay. Public forum two, opportunity for members of the public to address items that are not on today's agenda. Can't take any action, but we might in the future. Anybody? Seeing no one moving the microphone, liaison assignments, Morris.
I thought I was going to the AM City Council meeting tonight to talk about the housing needs assessment, but I don't see it on the agenda. So apparently it's been pushed back. I'm going to call Vanessa. All kinds of things could have come up.
Sure.
You know,
absolutely. Right?
Including, I looked at their agenda. It's a pretty heavy one tonight. So that might be it. Just to let you know, Booth meets this week, but I haven't asked to look at the public relations to help the director look at the website, redesign some of their brochures. Originally, this was defined as kind of a public relations or marketing and fundraising, and I let them know that we have made a decision that we're not doing any fundraising for any boards that we sit on, and helping them participate in that, so they scaled that back. And finally, I'd like to let you know that I guess a couple of weeks ago, I said that Community and Family Resources had looked at going to each county and asking for a per population donation. And I did go back to the board, to the CFR board last month, let them know that I did not support this, but I had informed our board. There was more discussion, and it looks like they will not be coming to us with that type of ask. Now, that board decided it. They are, CFR is applying, trying to get a grant from the CICS, the Mental Health Region. I don't know how that will go, but I just wanted to bring you up to date on where that status goes.
Thank you. Marty.
Our change to a Board of Health meeting that always has entertainment attached in that sense. I would say that this week we are down to two residents at Crestview. Likely that we will end the week with a zero there, and which has been a long and lengthy ordeal, and we are not quite there yet, but I appreciate the cooperation of all parties, not least of which the DNR has been a helpful partner. Just finished up a two-day conference with the admin team for the regional mental health in regards to the state mandated planning as far as where we are, see ourselves in light of Senate File 504. We are there doing the sorting and sifting out, and they will offer it to themselves in addition to the governing board. At that point, it will be something we will share. We have a rec meeting, a series of rec meetings here in Nevada in regards to our rec facility that is likely going to come to pass. That will be the mutual stakeholders of the city and the school, and good things will come that way. I wish that Ames has the good fortune I think Nevada is bringing to itself in regards to their healthy lifestyles, so their center. Mm-hmm. And during last night, went to that city council meeting that they made a purchase of ground to for a potential future siting of a new clinic in partnership with Mercy Hospital in Des Moines. That was a win. That was a win for Zering last night, and I commend them.
Yeah, it was fascinating to see what's going on there. Thanks, Marty. Thanks for your work with Crestview, and I hope we're at the end of that.
I'd like to say we are, what I would say if we were building something, we're on the check, the checkoff point of the final walkthrough.
Super. Take a motion to adjourn.
I want to come back to one more thing, but it really wasn't an update. It's a request that I hope that all three of us might feel comfortable with. We all get invited to go to various open houses and ribbon cuttings, et cetera. And sometimes, and I know I've done this, have forgotten to pass them along to each other. And this month is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and I saw a tweet that said, Rick, you were there, and Jessica Reynolds, and all the victims' names are read. And I contacted Jessica because I actually knew one of the victims and the man who killed her. And so I didn't know at the time. I'd have liked to have gone just to have a...
That was over a year ago.
Oh, that was a year ago.
Yeah, I saw that you had tweeted about it, and that was over a year ago.
Oh, interesting. Okay, in that case, the request is still, pass it along to each other. So that one, now next year, will mean something to you. I think you can depend on doing it next year.
And to that end, Morris, we all share each other's calendar. And so to this point, I put everything on my calendar, and I just counted on. I know I go and look at yours, I look at Marty's occasionally and see if I'm missing something. Are you comfortable if we continue that? So you didn't miss it.
I am. I didn't. There wasn't a date with that, and that's why. Okay, thank you. Anyway, but still, yes. And so to let you know, CFR is doing its groundbreaking on October 20th, which is Friday the 20th. If you want to go for lunch into Fort Dodge, if you just want to take, it'd take an hour and a half drive. I will be there. Okay, and it's over the noon hour. If you want
to
let me know.
Absolutely. Now a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thanks, everybody.